विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्राजदाचार्य अष्टोत्तर शत श्री श्रीमान अभय चरणारविंद भक्तिवेदांत गोस्वामी महाराज श्रील प्रभुपाद की जयम नित्यलीला प्रविष्ट विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्राजदाचार्य अष्टोत्तर शत श्री श्रीमान भक्ति सिद्धांत सरस्वती महाराज श्रील प्रभुपाद की अनंतकोटि वैष्णव वृंद की नामाचार्य श्रील हरिदास ठाकुर की प्रेम सहो श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधार श्रीवासादि गौर भक्त वृंद की श्री श्री राधा कृष्ण गोप गोपीनाथ श्यामकुंड राधाकुंड गिरी गोवर्धन की वृंदावन धाम की मायपुर धाम की मधुरपुरी धाम की जगन्नाथपुरी धाम की द्वारकापुरी धाम की गंगा माई की यमुना माई की तुलसी देवी की भक्ति देवी की सामवेद भक्त वृंद की गो प्रेमानंदी ऑल ग्लोरियस टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज ऑल ग्लोरियस टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज ऑल ग्लोरियस टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज ऑल ग्लोरियस टू श्री श्री गुरु एंड गौरांग ऑल ग्लोरियस टू श्रील प्रभुपाद नमो मुष्पदाय कृष्ण प्रसाय भूतले श्रीमदे भक्तिवेदांत स्वामी निधि नामिने नमस्ते सरस्वती देवी गौरवाणी प्रचारिणी निर्विशेष शून्यवादी पाश्चात्य देशधारिणी ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय संसार सागरे मग्नम दीनं मां करुणानिधे कर्मग्राह गृहीतांगं मां उद्धर भवार्णवा श्रीमद्भागवदाख्योऽयं प्रत्यक्ष कृष्णमेव हि स्वीकृतोऽसि मया नाथ मुक्त्यर्थं भवसागरे मनोरथे मदीयोऽयं सफला सर्वदा त्वया निर्विघ्नेनैव कर्तव्यं दासोऽहं तव केशव भवे भवे यथा भक्ति पादयोस्तव जायते तथा कुरुष्व देवेश नाथस्त्वं नो यद प्रभो नाम संकीर्तनम् यस्य सर्वपाप प्रणाशनम् प्रणामो दुःखशमन तम् नमामि हरिम् परम् जन्माद्यस्य यतोन्मयादितरतश्चार्थेष्वभिज्ञस्वरान् तेने ब्रह्म हृदाय आदिगवये मुह्यन्ति यल्सूरय तेजो वारिमृदम् यथा विनिमयो यत्र त्रिसर्गो मृषा धाम्ना स्वेन सदा निरस्तकुहकम् सत्यम् परम् धीमहि धर्म प्रोज्जित गैरवोत्रपरमो निर्मल्सराणां सदां वेद्यं वास्तवमत्र वस्तु शिवदं तापत्रयोन्मूलनम् श्रीमद्भागवते महामुनिकृते किं वा वरैरीश्वर सद्यो हृद्यवरुद्यवेत्र कृतिभि शुश्रूषुभि तल्क्षणा निगमकल्पतरोर्गलितं फलं शुकमुखादमृतद्रव संयुतं पिपद भागवतम् रसमालयम् मुहुरहो रसिका भुवि भावुकाः सच्चिदानन्दरूपाय विश्वोत्पत्यादिहेतवे तापत्रय विनाशाय श्रीकृष्णाय वयम् नमः यम् प्रव्रजन्तमनुभेदमपेदकृत्यम् द्वैपायनो विरहकादरमाजुहाव पुत्रेति तन्मयदयत्तरवोऽभिनेतु तम् सर्वभूतहृदयम् मुनिमानतोऽस्मि यस्वानुभावमखिलश्रुतिसारमेकम् अध्यात्मदीपम् अतिथितीर्षदाम् तमोऽन्धम् संसारिणाम् करुणयाः पुराणगुह्यम् तम् व्याससूनुम् उपयामि गुरुम् मुनीनाम् नारायणम् नमस्कृत्य नरम् चैव नरोत्तमम् देवीम् सरस्वतीम् व्यासम् ततो जयमुदीरयेत् कमनीयकिशोरमुग्धमूर्ते कलवेणुकुणिदादृदाननेन्दोः मम वाचि विजृम्भदा मुरारे मधुरीम् न कनिकापि कापि कापि नमाओं विष्णुपदाय कृष्णप्रसाय भूतले श्रीमदे भक्तिवेदान्तस्वामिन् इति नामिने नमस्ते सरस्वती देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेष शून्यवादि पाश्चात्यादेशधारिणी श्रीमल् गुरुचरणारविन्दाभ्याम् नमः वन्दे नन्दव्रजस्त्रीणाम् പലരേണുമഭീഷ്ണശാസാം ഹരികഥോദ്ഗീതം പുനാദി ഭുവനത്രയം ഗോപീചരണാരവിന്ദ പരമാണവേ നമ പീതാംബരം കരവിരാജിത ചക്രശംഖം കൗമോദകീ സരസിജം കരുണാസമുദ്രം രാധാസഹായമതിസുന്ദര മന്ദഹാസം പാതാലേശമനിശം പ്രതിഭാവയാമി കോമളം കുജയൻ വേണു ശ്യാമളോയം കുമാരക വേദവേദ്യ പരം ബ്രഹ്മ ഭാസദാം പുരതോ മമ മൂകം കരോതി വാചാലം പങ്കും ലംഘയതേ ഗിരിം യൽ കൃപാതമഹം വന്ദേ പരമാനന്ദമാധവം ശ്രീകൃഷ്ണായ നമ ശ്രീമതി രാധികായേ നമ സർവത്ര ഗോവിന്ദനാമ സങ്കീർത്തനം ഗോവിന്ദ ഗോവിന്ദ ഓം പാർത്ഥായ പ്രതിബോധിതാം ഭഗവതാം നാരായണേന സ്വയം വ്യാസേന ഗ്രഥിതാം പുരാണമുനിനാം മധ്യേ മഹാഭാരതം അദ്വൈതാമൃതവർഷിണി ഭഗവതി അഷ്ടാദശാധ്യായിനി അമ്പത്വാമനുസന്ധദാമി ഭഗവദ്ഗീതേ ഭവദ്വേഷിണി നമോസ്തു ദേ വ്യാസവിശാലബുദ്ധേ പുല്ലാരവിന്ദായതപത്രനേത്രം യേന ത്വയാ ഭാരതതൈലപൂർണം പ്രജ്വാലിതോ ജ്ഞാനമയ പ്രദീപ പ്രപന്നവാരിജാതായ തോത്രവേ ത്രൈകബാണയേ ജ്ഞാനമുദ്രായ കൃഷ്ണായ ഗീതാമൃതദേ നമ സർവോപനിഷദോ ഗാവോദോഗ്ധാ ഗോപാലനന്ദന പാർത്ഥോ വത്സ സുധീർഭോക്താ ദുഗ്ധം ഗീതാമൃതം മഹത് വസുദേവസുതം ദേവം കംസച്ചാണൂരമർദനം ദേവകീ പരമാനന്ദം കൃഷ്ണം വന്ദേ ജഗദ്ഗുരും ഭീഷ്മദ്രോണതടാ ജയദ്രഥ ജലാ ഗാന്ധാര നീലോൽപല ശല്യഗ്രാഹവതീ കൃപേണ വഹനി കർണേന വേലാകുല അശ്വത്ഥാമാവികർണ ഘോരമകരാ ദുര്യോധനാവർത്തിനി സോത്തീർണ ഖലു പാണ്ഡവൈരണ നദീ കൈവർത്തക കേശവ പാരാശര്യവജസരോജമലം ഗീതാർത്ഥഗന്ധോൽക്കടം നാനാഖ്യാനകേസരം ഹരികഥ സംബോധനാഭൂതിതം ലോകൈ സജ്ജനഷൽപദൈരഹരഹപ്രീയമാനം മുദാ ഭൂയാത് ഭാരതപങ്കജ കൈവല പ്രധ്വംസിന ശ്രേയസേ മൂകം കരോതി വാചാലം പങ്കും ലംഘയതേ ഗിരിം യൽകൃപാതമഹം വന്ദേ പരമാനന്ദമാധവം യം ബ്രഹ്മ വരുണേന്ദ്രരുദ്രമരുദസ്ത്വൻ വന്ദി ദിവ്യൈസ്തവൈർവേദൈ സാംഗപദൈ ക്രമോപനിഷദൈർഗായന്തി യം സാമഗാഃ ധ്യാനാവസ്ഥിത തദ്ഗതേന മനസാ പശ്യന്തി യം യോഗിനോ യസ്യാന്തം ഭവിദുസ്സുരാസുരഗണേ ദേവായ തസ്മൈ നമഃ സർവത്ര ഗോവിന്ദനാമ സങ്കീർത്തനം ഗോവിന്ദ ഗോവിന്ദ സോ we are back after a long break. It's been a really long break. And it has, some of you may have taken advantage of the time to listen to the previous classes, which may have helped you, but it is a big topic, Srimad Bhagavatam, and you can spend the whole life digging into it to understand what is Vedavyasa Maharshi and Shuka Brahmarshi is telling us. So, this Srimad Bhagavatam, even though outwardly it may appear as though it's 18,000 verses and 335 chapters, 12 cantos, and one should be able to read through it and understand something from that. Yeah, and it doesn't, for an average person who have spend a lot of time in studying so many other subjects and topics, when they come to Srimad Bhagavatam, they get a little bit finding it difficult, because that is the way of Bhagavatam is spoken, and that is the contents of the Bhagavatam as well. I will give you some examples how difficult it is to come out through the Bhagavatam to what is Vedavyasa Maharshi pointing at, what is Shuka Brahmarshi is telling us, what's all the great devotees are telling us, right? If you look at Bhagavatam, in the beginning itself, when Shuka Brahmarshi comes to the scene in the second canto, that's where he starts speaking, isn't it? The first chapter in the second canto, he starts speaking Bhagavatam. What did he do as soon as he came in? If you look, think about it, it is interesting to see how Shuka Brahmarshi is thinking about this world and how he has analyzed things. The first thing when he came to speak Srimad Bhagavatam to Parikshit Maharaj, the first thing what he did is, he blasted all the householders. Have you noticed that? Look at his thinking, how he is thinking about it. If you look at that verses, if you see, he is saying, Shri Shuka Vacha, the first verse itself, Variyan Eshade Prashna Kritod Logahidam Nrupa Atma Vil Samadapum Samshodha Vyadishu Yapara. Do you ask me the right question, he said to Parikshit. Because this is the question one should ask. Why? If you look at the second verse, he say, from the second verse onwards, everything what he is saying is about householders. Did you see that? He is just going to speak Srimad Bhagavatam for 7 days to Parikshit. And the beginning itself is a very strong criticism of the householders. Why householders? He is saying the reasons why he is saying all these things about them. He is saying there, Shrotavyadini Rajendra Nurnam Santi Sahasrasha Apashyadam Almatattvam Griheshu Grihamedhinam. The topic we are discussing is Almatattvam, is it not? And that's what he is talking about. He is saying, Apashyadam Almatattvam. Almatattvam they won't get it, he said. Why? Because they are so busy with millions of other things in this world. They just don't have the time for this. So he has a very strong opinion about it, that those who are too absorbed in this world, family life and world, better that they don't try to understand Srimad Bhagavatam. That's why he said it in the beginning itself, that householders, unless they withdraw themselves from the householder responsibilities and attachment to a large degree, Atmatattvam is difficult. That's what he is saying here. Apashyadam Atmatattvam. We were discussing about Atmatattva Prapti. We will go to that little later because it's a first class after a long break. We'll talk about few other things about Bhagavatam before we get back into Atmatattva Prapti. So he is saying here, Apashyadam Atmatattvam. They will never see the, they will never experience the soul. They will never realize the soul. Apashyadam. They will not see it, he said. Why? Griheshu Grihamedhinam. Householder life is like that. We all become Grihamedhis. There is no Grihastha in this world today. Almost all are Grihamedhis, isn't it? Grihamedhis means they have only one thing to do in this world, managing the family life. If it comes to that stage, Shobhramashi is not very happy with them. That's why to say this in the right from the beginning itself, as soon as he started speaking, this is how he begins the topic, talking about his householder life. There are so many other things to talk about, but he didn't say anything else. First thing, he pointed at the householder to say to us that apashyadam almadattvam griheshu grihamedhinam. Then he said, the problem is, he said, nidraya hriyadayam aktam divaya vivayena cha vavaya divacharte haya rajan kudumba bharanena va. That's how they spend their time. Kudumba bharana. How family. I know it's not funny, but it is funny one way. Because you can imagine, in our life of 60, 80 years in this, whatever time we have, a majority of the time, energy is invested in this. Griha bharanam. Kudumba bharanam. And at the end, what is the profit? Nothing from that. So it's not a good deal, according to him. Griheshu grihamedhinam, he says. Mivayena cha vavaya. And naturally, nidraya hriyadaya naktam. Due time spent on sleep. And vivayena cha, all vyavaharam goes on during the day. And divacharte hayarajan. They, in the daytime, they don't know what they have to do. They are running around everywhere. Kudumba bharanenava. Because they are busy. Anytime you ask the householder, they will say they are busy. They are busy. They are the only people who are busy. He hasn't said this about anybody else. He didn't say this about brahmacharis. He didn't say about the sannyasis. But about the householders. Opening itself, he is making this statement. Then he said, Dehabhatya kalatradishu atmasainyeshu asalsavi tesham pramatandhanam pashyanna bina pashyadi. What he is saying is that the householder gets into this illusion. What's that illusion? That if I have a home, family members, and expansions of family and all that, that connection there, the strong bondage there, is he feels that it's an army protecting him from everything, from all the problems, especially from the impending death. He feels that they're all around me, they will look after me, they'll take care of me. All this kind of illusion in their heads, he's saying they're Atma-sainis, they are his army. Tesham pramatta nidhanam, pashyan navina pashyari. Because of that they become pramatta. Pramatta means they get intoxicated with that understanding. And therefore, Atma-dattam won't get into their head. Then he said, therefore, he says to Parikshit, Tasmat Bharata Sarvatma Bhagavan Ishiro Hari Shrodavya Kirtidavyascha Smartavyascha Echadabhayam. If you want to come out of this, remember Parikshit has given up all this and he is coming and sitting here to listen to it. And to Parikshit, Shukabrahmarshi is saying this. He appreciating that what Parikshit has done, that he walked out of the home. At least some point in life one has to do this. Because this life can go on like this, and the whole lifetime could be spent on this Kudumba Bharane Nava. So he appreciates that, and he said, if you want to get out of this fear of death, which is for everybody at some point in time, when the body starts withering away, you start realizing you are on your way out. Tasmal Bharata Sarvatma Bhagavan Ishwaro Hari Shrodavya Kirtidavyascha. There is only one business to do in this world. Simply to hear about Krishna. Nothing else. Shrodavya Kirtidavyascha Smartavyascha Chadabhayam. Shravanam Kirtanam Smaranam. Three things. Shrodavya Kirtidavyascha Smartavyascha Chadabhayam. If these three things happen, well, then Bhayam won't be there. He can leave this world fearlessly. Otherwise, it could be a big problem before leaving this world. So, this is just the beginning when Shukabrahmarshi walks into the, to speak to Parikshit, and this is what he had to say in the beginning. Now, if you go into, there are a lot of things about Bhagavatam to say. There's a lot of things. It'll come to your mind when you, if you give time to it. And if you read or think and hear regularly, that is the Bhagavatam culture is like that. Constantly it generates thoughts inside us. And one thing is there, that if you are reading regularly Bhagavatam, listening, thinking about it, the kind of questions that comes up will not be answered immediately. It will take a long time to get to understand what is the answer to these questions. If you are, some people say, oh, I have no questions, everything is clear. That, what that means is, they have not understood anything. If you are not getting questions from Srimad Bhagavatam, what that means is that either you are not fully seriously reading it or thinking about it, and therefore no questions, no doubts either. But any intelligent person who have in the recorded history have always spoken that from Srimad Bhagavatam they were given, so many questions have come up in their mind. And these questions, what comes in, will not go away straight, immediately. It will last there for quite a long time. Years and years, sometimes you won't get an answer to it. You can read all Bhagavatam books, and you can think about it, but still the answer won't come. There are several questions in every canto in the Bhagavatam, where you won't find a clear answer which satisfies you, your thoughts and mind. Yeah. So, because of this only, in the first canto, in the second chapter, because the situation is like that, Sudha Goswami mentions there that he said, Bhagavatam should be heard Shushrusha Shraddhadhanasya Vasudeva Katha Ruji. Syan Mahal Sevayam Vipra Punya Dhirtan Shayvanal. You will see in the second chapter, in the 16th verse. A few verses, what is he trying to say? You know, in Bhagavatam, everything is packed very close. To untie it out and take it out from that, what is the message for us? That takes time. He said, Shushrusha Shraddhanasya Vasudeva Katharuji. That constantly serving Srimad Bhagavatam, It will give you some taste for Vasudeva Katha, Krishna Katha. Try to understand Krishna. A desire will come inside. Syan Mahal Sevaya Vipro Punyadurta Nishayavanali. And Mahatmas, their service and getting attached to them is the only way that you will start an entry into it. It is through them you get in. Because they will open it up for you and tell you that, look, it is like this. And you will slowly start thinking about it. Yeah. So therefore, what did he say? Shrunodam Sakatam Krishna Punyashravana Kirtanal Hridyandastohi Abhadrani Vidhunodi Suhural Sadam. He said, if you keep hearing Shrunodam Sakatam Krishna, about Krishna Katha, which means Katha, Sudhi, Upadesham, everything, everything related to Krishna. If you keep hearing that, Punyashravana Kirtanal, it will bring all auspicious things into your mind. And Hridyandastohi Abhadrani, all the Abhadram, inauspicious things in the mind, will leave you. It will not come back. Vidhunodi Suhrul Sadam, and you will feel a relationship with Krishna. That will happen. It should happen to anyone who has started hearing Srimad Bhagavatam at some point or the other. Then he said, again he put this condition there, Sudha Goswami. What did he say? Nashta prayeshu abhadreshu nityam bhagavata sevaya. It has to be done regularly. You cannot just read once a book like Srimad Bhagavatam and leave it and thinking that I have read and understood everything. No. Nityam bhagavata sevaya. Daily you have to do it. Nashta prayeshu abhadreshu. All the inauspicious things will leave us. And then Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya, what will happen is, Bhagavati Uttama Shloke, Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtiri, you will start feeling some connection to Krishna. Attachment to Krishna will naturally come in your heart because Krishna has spoken certain things what nobody else has spoken in this world before. There's a lot of things about it to say. We will keep saying this and over a period of time we'll try to explain as much as possible. He said, Bhagavati Uttama Shloke, Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtiki. Bhakti will develop in the heart. Then he said, what is actually causing the problem for us to get attached to Bhagavatam or to attach to Krishna? These two things, Rajogunam and Tamogunam. Yadva Rajas Tamo Bhavam, Kama Lobhada Yashaye, Cheda Vedar Anavidam, Stidam Sattva Prasidati. Till one comes to Sattva Gunam, when somebody is controlled by Rajogunam and Tamogunam, it is difficult. So Rajogunam and Tamogunam, one has to free oneself first. That's an important requirement. Because you know very well, in Rajas, Rajogunam is very strong. At that time, you feel all this responsibility in the world. Necessary to, you are feeling that you are running the world. And everything is working according to your plan and desires and things like that. All this is due to the Rajogunam. Tamogunam is the other way. Tamogunam makes you feel that it's a hopeless situation in this world anyway. I'm not bothered. What's the point in doing anything? This attitude comes. So both Rajogunam and Tamogunam, this is what they offer to us. One makes you feel that you have the whole responsibility of the world. And this will go from generation to generation to generation. It keeps going. And Tamogunam makes you feel that it's a hopeless situation. So, Sudha Goswami is saying there, Yadha tada rajastamo bhavam, kama lobhada yashaye. It ends up in two things, kamam lobham. Cheda medha ranavidam stidam sattve prasidati. If you keep hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, gradually you will be able to come out of these two lower modes of nature. Which one? Rajogunam and Tamogunam. That is the benefit from that. Siddham Sattva Prasidati. And you will be able to, that Sattugunam, even though you have many other ways of controlling Sattugunam, for example, as it said later on in the 11th canto, Ekadasha Skandam, Krishna says, where you will live, whom you associate with, all these things, the mantra you chant, the water you drink, and 10 things he has spoken there. None of them, Krishna himself says later, is as powerful as Srimad Bhagavatam in keeping a person in Sattugunam. To stay in Sattugunam, you require something different than all these things. That is why he is saying here that Cheda Edar Anavidham Chetasa means the mind. Mind has to give that purification inside. Sthitam sattva prasidati. You will remain in the sattvagunam. And then what happens? Evam prasanna manaso bhagavad bhakti yogada bhagavad tattva vijnana mukta sangasya jayade. Only when you are in sattvagunam, you can understand what Shuga Brahma Rishi is telling us. Otherwise you won't understand. You see, Shuga Brahma Rishi has spoken so many things in the Bhagavatam. And some of the doubts that has come from what he said, it is not easy to solve them. You can go and listen to so many lectures, but it is so complicated, the way Bhagavatam is structured, right? I'll give you 2-3 examples, but only 2 or 3, because otherwise it'll take a long time. 2 or 3 examples, important ones, I'll mention to you, and then you think about it yourself and see how you feel about it. First time when I read Bhagavatam and listening to the lectures and the classes and all that, where the sannyasis was talking and all that, they were all talking about going back home, back to Godhead, and going to Golokam after death. This is how it was presented all the time, and it is even now it is presented like that. That's the way it's spoken at the temples, isn't it? It's not a criticism or anything. What I'm saying is, how Bhagavatam can cause a lot of confusion in the mind. So, after hearing about going back home, back to Godhead, we thought, oh, it's all a very simple process. All you have to do is 16 rounds, chant four regulative principles, get initiated, and at the end of life, you are on your way back, home, back to Godhead. And then, because it was made so easy that way, by saying like that, when you start open Bhagavatam and start reading, Sri Shiva Brahmarshi, in the very second canto, when he started speaking, he started saying there are 2 kinds of liberation. Remember? One is called Krama Mukti and the other one is called the Sadhya Mukti. We talked about this. If you remember all that, what we spoke about it, only then you will realize that what I am saying is how genuine it is. So there we were told Sadhya Mukti and Krama Mukti are the 2 ways for liberation. Whereas we were told you are just going back home, back to Godhead at the end of the life. Yeah. So this Sadhya Mukti and Krama Mukti, when we discussed that, so that created this doubt in the mind. So what about our going back home, back to Godhead? What about this Sadhya Mukti and Krama Mukti? Which one do we fall into? Naturally that question comes, you are studying Bhagavatam to understand yourself and for your own guidelines, isn't it? That's what you are expecting from the Bhagavatam, to guide your life through in spiritual life. This book, Srimad Bhagavatam, is supposed to help us through our life in spiritual life. That's what we want, isn't it? So that question comes up, that question came up, and I had no answer. There was no answer. Whom do you ask this question? We were regularly told it's all going back home, back to Godhead. Here Shuga Brahma Rishi is saying, these are the only 2 ways you go back. Either through Krama Mukti or through Sadhya Mukti. 2 ways, right? And neither of us is suiting our plan. So naturally, this issue has been in the mind hovering for a very long time. Not able to find an answer. Sadhya Mukti and Krama Mukti, Shuga Brahma Rishi is talking about. And our devotees are saying that we are all going back home, back to Godhead. And they were also saying, when a devotee left the body, he said, oh, he has gone back home, back to Godhead. And they are certified by people, others also. And so it naturally makes you think that, is that such an easy thing, this going back? So that went on for a while, and then after reading through Sadhya Mukti and Krama Mukti, we couldn't understand, at least I couldn't understand, that which one is it, our choice or is it something decided by Krishna? This question will come, is it not? Naturally it is. It's quite natural you want to know what you are doing, isn't it? So reading through it, you couldn't make head and tail of it. This is Bhagavadam. I'm saying this is how Bhagavadam is. You see, Bhagavadam was spoken 5,000 years ago by a great personality. Vedavyasa Maharshi compiled it, Shukra Brahma Maharshi spoke to Parikshit. Naturally, their intelligence and their spiritual position was far, far higher than us in every way. They had much more deeper understanding of life from the spiritual point of view than what we are like today, right? So it was possible that Shukra Brahma Maharshi spoke was sufficient for Parikshit Maharaj, and similarly Shravanaga Rishi and all the Rishis who were present in the Naimisharanyam, who heard this from Suda Goswami. For them, they could assimilate that without difficulty. But we are here now, after 5,000 years, listening to those words. And naturally, these doubts will come. It has to come. If it doesn't come, there is something wrong with us. If we think that it's all, I have no problem with this, I have no problem with that. If I say that about Bhagavadam, it will be a lie. It's not the truth. So, naturally, this Karma Mukti and Sadhya Mukti became, it took a while for me to understand that what exactly mean by these two, Karma Mukti and Sadhya Mukti, and able to understand the difficulties in both processes. Why one goes in Karma Mukti, another person goes in Sadhya Mukti. After a long inquiry and hearing from others and inquiring from them, we came to understand that what this Karma Mukti and Sadhya Mukti is, what it means actually. Then, what Shukra Brahma Maharshi has done there, after talking about Karma Mukti and Sadhya Mukti, in one verse, he put the whole thing that who is qualified for that. And that verse, once you read that, you realize that neither of them is for you. That's how it is. I don't know whether you remember, you know what we discussed before, probably it may not have stayed in your mind. That is why I would still suggest that you should go back to the old classes. Fortunately, what we have all that in the web, right? So we discussed these chapters on its own, and we mentioned there also, particularly listening to Shukra Sarasvatam. Shukra Sarasvatam, you remember? That Sukadeva Goswami talking about before he began, his prayers to Krishna to speak Bhagavatam. 12 verses are there. In introduction to that, we talked about these things also. So what was that verse? If you look into the last verse in the second chapter, in the second canto, you'll find there, Pibandiye Bhagavatam Atmadastvadam Kathamrdam Shravanapudeshu Sampradam Punandide Vishaya Vidushita Shayam Prajandi Tacharana Saroruham Digam. In that one verse, he mentioned who is qualified for Sadhya Mukti and Karma Mukti. You have to connect this verse with all of the other two chapters. This one verse. But he wouldn't say like that. He will say like this in his own inimitable style. He is saying this. Pibandiye Bhagavadam Atmanasadam. One who is conscious of Andaryami inside, he is saying, Atmanasadam, Pibandiye, they do what? Kathamrudam, Shravanapude, Shusamrudam. And they will get attracted to Krishna this way. And they will, Shravanapudeshu, they will be constantly busy with listening to that. And then what else? Punandide, Vishaya Vidushida, Ashayam. They will have no attraction for material happiness. That means, practically, they have said goodbye to this world. It is for them, this Karma Mukti and Sadhya Mukti. That took a long time to realize, to understand, that Shukra Brahma Maharshi is saying about Karma Mukti and Sadhya Mukti is for those people who have Vishaya Vidushid Ashayam. Vishaya Vidushid Ashayam means sense gratification, free from all kinds of sense gratification. Which means they have no attraction in this world for anything whatsoever. No matter what goes on in this world, it doesn't matter to them. They have come to that stage. That means they have reached that state of renunciation and detachment from this world. It is for them, he says, Prajandi Tat Charana Saravaru Hamdiyam. They are on their way to Krishna. Through these two processes, one of them. So it is only for them it is meant. who these persons, we have discussed this in that classes. If you want to go back and listen to it, it is much more in detail we spoke about it. But today we don't have so much time, so I'll continue with this. So that is the Shukasarasvatam lectures. So many topics we discussed on its own, where we had more time to talk about it, isn't it? Some of them 50 hours, 60 hours altogether if you take it. That's about 50, 60 hours details. many, many topics we have covered. Ajamila story, for example, it's about 10 hours we spoke. What is in the three chapters? So, I'm just saying that it took a long time to realize that neither Krama Mukti, Sadhya Mukti is for us. So, keeping that in the mind, Shuga Brahmarshi then come to, there is a next class of people. This is the best class, the best ones, who are going back to Krishna with total renunciation, detachment from this world. But the next group comes, who are they? They have desires inside. They have desires inside. And they cannot do anything till the desires are fulfilled. Desires have not left them. And that desire can vary from person to person. Different desires. So what did he do? In the third chapter, he gave a list of devadas whom one should worship. And he also said, they are all Krishna's different forms. Referring to Shiva, Sri Parvati, and Gandharvas, and Urvashi, and many other. He has listed there, isn't it? You can see, if you want this, you do this. If you want this, you do this. He gave a list of devadas whom you should worship regularly, and they will bless you with the result, what you are looking for. And the idea was that gradually by doing that, you will realize one day all this is not worth. And then leave this and move on to the higher level. So, people who have desires in life, who wants to be, who are finding it difficult to withdraw from this attachment in this world, and desires, for them, this third chapter, what he has spoken. And finally he said that, agama sarva gama va. If you take it to Krishna, moksha gama udaradi, whatever it may be, tivrena bhakti yogena yajeda purusham param. He gave a conclusion statement also like that. If you are not wanting any of these, then you can worship Krishna like this. If you have no desires, or if you have all the desires, or if you want liberation, still you can worship Krishna. In that way, he made a comment like that. Yeah. So, you knew, when you go through all these things, and when you start thinking that spiritual life is not that simple as you thought about it. There's a long way to travel. That's the first impression you get it. That it is not that simple as we make of it. There is a long way to travel. And if you follow Srimad Bhagavatam, this is what Bhagavatam is saying to us, right? So, then the question comes next one, next stage, right? About liberation. Liberation in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Now, one issue you have seen now about Sadhyamukti and Kramamukti and about going back home, back to Godhead. How different it is. The way Bhagavatam has spoken and the way we made to understand or we thought it is like that. And this clarity, to get this, it took a long time. Because you know how it is, that you are thinking, but you're not getting any answer. And somehow or the other, someday you get to meet somebody who had a little bit deeper understanding, and with their help, he explains to you that this is how, my brother, it is like this. It's not going to be so simple like that. And then you feel a little peaceful about it. Now comes the question of liberation. Yeah. So, liberation is spoken in the Srimad Bhagavatam in several ways. Apart from the Sadhyamukti and Kramamukti, which is talking about liberation, Sri Shiva Brahmarshi gave a definition to Mukti. Do you remember? Mukti hi tanyadha rupam swarubena vyavasthiti. As far as he is concerned, his definition of Mukti is this. Mukti means anyadha rupam gosave sarupena vyavasthiti. That's what he said, right? So having said that, Sri Shuka Brahmarshi put that in the second canto itself when he spoke about mukti. Because through sadhyomukti and krama mukti, that's where you get at the end. Sorry. That's where you get it. At the end you come to this stage. Mukti hito anyadha rupam sarupena vyavasthiti. That is what you where you get to at the end of sadhyomukti or krama mukti. So he defined it and left it like that. Then, when he came to third canto, Devahuti Devi asked her mother, asked her son, Kapila Vasudev, Kapila Maharshi, about Bhakti Yoga. And Kapila Maharshi told Devahuti Devi that there are five kinds of liberation. Remember that? It said there that Salokyam, Sarshti, Samipyam, Sairupyam, Aigatam Apyuda. There's a verse you will see there. I think it is in the 325 or somewhere. The five kinds of moving into the Salokyam, Sarshtyam, Sarshti, Samipyam, Sairupyam, Sayujyam. Salokyam means going to Vaikuntha planet and staying there in Krishna's world, in Vaikuntha planets, or Golokam, wherever it is. Sarshti means with all the opulences you live. With all the opulences you live there. Sarshti means with all the opulences you live there. Salokyam, Sarshti. Then Samipyam. Samipyam means what? To stay with Krishna. You are there with Samipyam. Sairupyam. Sairupyam means same four-handed form you have. Except that you won't have Kaustubham and you don't have the Srivalsam. Kaustubham and Srivalsam you don't have. But everything otherwise bodily features are like Mahavishnu there in the Vaikuntha planet. You will get that. And finally, Sayujyam, to merge with Krishna. So these five kinds of liberation is spoken in the third canto by Kapila Vasudev to Devahuti Devi. Now, when you came to third canto and read that, again the doubts came back. Which one now? The Sadhyomukti and Kramamukti is spoken in the second canto. Now, these five types of liberation Kapila Vasudevi is saying to Devahuti Devi. He never mentioned anything about Sadhyamukti or Kramamukti. He mentioned about these five kinds of liberation. You know these verses are there in the third canto. Salokya, Sashti Samipyam, Sairupyam, Aigatum Apyuda. That's the first line. And so, naturally, when you are... And Kabilam, remind you that, Kabilam is the first philosophical treaty in the Bhagavatam. When you start Bhagavatam, the first philosophical exposition in the Bhagavatam is Kapilam. Kapila Maharshi's teachings to Devahuti Devi. If you remember that in the Srimad Bhagavatam, there are certain topics which are very, very deep and very helpful in self-realization. And one of them is Kapilam. Kapilam, Bharata Rahugana Samvadam. Bharata and Rahugana. These teachings, Shruti Gita, and Krishna's instructions to Uddhava. These four topics, if you have studied it very well, you can say that you have understood Bhagavatam a lot. A lot, you could say. Because these four topics are for realization, first of all. Which one? Kapila Maharshi's teachings to Devahuti Devi, Bharata Yogeshwara's teachings to Rahugana, and Shruti Gita, and Krishna's teachings to Uddhava. You can see by the very nature of these four topics, they are very heavy subjects and very difficult to fully realize it, what they are saying. The interesting thing is, Bharata Yogeshwara teachings to Rahugana is only 20 verses. But in that 20 verses, what he has packed, it has made Rahugana to make completely lost himself. And he started saying to Bharata Yogeshwara that I couldn't understand what you are saying. It was that difficult it was, because of the depth of those verses, the 20 verses, what Bharata Yogeshwara has spoken. There is a lot of things he has said in that 20 verses. And then when Bharata Yogeshwara talked about it, and Rahugana didn't understand that, then Bharata Yogeshwara put it in a different format for him to make it a little easier. All this done for others' benefit, because Bharata and Rahugana has a relationship from previous life. So Bharata has made it sure that Rahugana will come out from this bodily identity, right? So when we came to Kapila Maharshi's teachings to Devahuti, and these five kinds of liberation spoken about there, the whole train of thought has got completely derailed. That what happened to Krama Mukti and Sadhya Mukti now? Here he is saying it is like this. And then that took a long time to understand, because what we are trying to do is to understand what Shukha Brahma Rishi is telling us, isn't it? That's what we want to know. And here in the Bhagavatam it is spoken like this. So again, for many, many, many years, this doubt carried on in the mind. To ask somebody, why is it like this, it's spoken. Above all, at the last minute, in the 12th canto, what do you find? Parikshit Maharaj is leaving this body. Shukha Brahmarshi gave him the Upadesham, the instructions, and he realized, Aham Brahmasmi. And that's it. That's the end of Parikshit's material life. It's over with that, isn't it? He realized, Aham Brahmasmi. That is his realization, because the verses are very clear where he said that. Aham Brahma Param Dhamam. Brahmaham paramam padam evam samichan atmanam atmanyadhaya nishkale. That verse is nothing but aham brahmasmi. So Parikshit is leaving this world, aham brahmasmi. Shukha Brahma Rishi has spoken about Sadhya Mukti and Krama Mukti. Kapila Vasudeva has spoken about the five kinds of liberation. Added to all that, we have the definition from Shukha Brahma Rishi. Mukti hi tanyatha rupam swarupena vyavasthiti in the beginning. So you have got all these different statements in the Bhagavatam. How do you connect with all this? These doubts will keep on going in the mind for years and years till you get some clarity on all these things. What I am saying is, if Bhagavatam is not creating doubts in your mind, there is some problem. That's what I am saying. If you are feeling that everything is very easy and I am reading through and I got it, then you haven't got it. But if it is creating doubts and years you are exploring and trying to find an answer, that means you are in the right track. That's the way it should be. You see? So, from all these things, you also have to realize it, that you can't see Bhagavatam in isolation. Vedic literature has one message to us. What is that? To live a life in such a way that you don't have to come back again and accept another material body. That's the main message, isn't it? To all other things are secondary. That we don't have to accept another birth here with another material body and suffer through this whole cycle of miseries of material life. That's how Krishna has put it in the Bhagavad Gita. He told us, anityam asukham logam. This place is not the right place to be, one. Dukha alayam ashashvatam. More than that, Krishna needed only four words to say this. Dukha alayam ashashvatam. Anityam asukham logam. Basically what Krishna is saying is that this place is not meant to be an ideal place to be. It has got a manufacturing problem itself. You cannot fix it. Don't try to fix this world. Waste of time. Because by creation itself, it is like this. What's the point in wasting time here, trying to sort out this place? Anityam asukham logam. Also he said, dukhalayam ashashvatam. It is temporary and it is also full of miseries. After saying all these things, Krishna left to Arjuna to accept it or reject it, whichever way you want it. And the same thing he told Uddhava also, the same thing. So, when Krishna said all these things, you can see from that that the goal is for getting out of this conditioned life, never to come back again. And that is why liberation or mukti is an important topic to understand, and why one should strive for that, to come to that, like Parikshit did and Sukadeva Goswami did. So, Parikshit Maharaj realized Aham Brahmasmi, and Shuka Brahmarshi walked away from there without saying any more further, because he understood that Shuka Parikshit has reached the state where he should be, and he is not going to come back again from that. Now, the five kinds of liberation, now, that's leave that there at the moment. When five kinds of liberation were spoken by Kavila Maharshi to Devahuti, I'm just talking about all the doubts that's coming to the mind. Yeah? So, think about it and see what do you feel about it, and then you have to find the answer yourself, whichever is satisfying your mind. If these five kinds of liberation, what we have spoken here in the third canto, Kapila Maharshi spoken, if they are proper liberation, then you shouldn't come back again, isn't it? But generally, these five kinds of liberation is not accepted as liberation from the Upanishad side. This is how difficult it is to get to the right conclusion. If Upanishads are not accepting these five kinds of liberation, Upanishads only accept the first statement. Which one? Muktihi tanyatharyupam surubena vyavastati. Not these five kinds. And that is visible in the Bhagavatam. Where? In two places in the Bhagavatam. Do you know where? One, when it came to Mahabali's story, when they were discussing about Bali Maharaj, Mahabali, Vamanamurti came to Mahabali, and Vamanamurti stood in front of Mahabali, 2 feet high, little boy, he's in Brahmachari, standing there. And Mahabali, looking at him, full of effulgence in the face, Krishna has taken this form, and full of effulgence in the face, and told Vamanamurti, ask me whatever you want. And he made a joke of the whole thing, saying to him, you want chariots, you want elephants, you want horses, you want so many other things he offered. And finally he said to him, I can understand you are a brahmachari, maybe you want to get married. So maybe you want a nice girl to get married to, because looking at his eyes, a matching girl to find may be difficult for you. So is that why you are here? All these things he asked him, right? And when he asked these questions to Vamanamurti, Vamanamurti is counting inside, that ego building up inside to control, to get Mahabali inside. Mahabali, Vamanamurti has a lot of respect for Mahabali. You have to recognize that. What did he say? Uddhava says to Krishna, among all the Brahmanical qualities, you have Mahabali is the ideal Brahmana. Brahmanyanam balistvam kradishu jabayajnyosmi vireshu parthaha. You remember in Bhagavatam, there is Krishna's vibhudis were spoken in several places, isn't it? And we start thinking, why Krishna is saying all these things about vibhudi? Vibhudi means Krishna's opulences, right? So is Krishna boasting himself by saying all these things to us? He says, among the mountains I am Himalayas, among the oceans I am Sagaram, and so many things he has spoken. So Vamanamurti says to Mahabali that, see, your tradition, he says to Mahabali, I know your tradition. It is in your tradition that Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu had come. It's not. They are your ancestors. And I'm not surprised at all that you have asked me like this. That whatever you want, you ask Mahabali. The way he asked him, right? So Vamanamurti is saying to Mahabali, I'm not at all surprised that you have spoken like this. And I do remember that your ancestors, Hiranyaksha, the way he punched on my chest that time, I've not forgotten, he said. That pain I still feel, he said. Remember when they fought each other, Varaha Avatara, in that, right? And then after that, time went on, your other uncle, Hiranyakashipu, what did he do? He went looking for me. He went to Vaikuntham and he didn't find me there, so he came back. So you start thinking, is Vaikuntham is like that? You can just go and come back from there anytime? That's one question, right? So I'm just saying this, that in relationship with these five kinds of liberation and this Vaikuntha journey of Hiranyakashipu, it makes you start thinking that if he has gone to Vaikuntham, why did he come back? It is mentioned in the 8th canto, you can see there, we talked about that, that Mahabali was told by Vayamana Murthy that your ancestor Hiranyakashipu went to Vaikuntham looking for me. He didn't find me there. Why? Because I knowing well that he will come looking for me, I went and was hiding in his heart because I knew that he won't look inside. You see, what this is all a story spoken to tell us that unless you look inside, you won't find Krishna. Antaryami inside is where he is. Looking in the world outside is not the answer for that. To teach that lesson through this story, Vedavyas and Shukam Brahmarshi has put it in this way to us. That Mahamanamurthy is saying to Mahabali, he was looking for me, he didn't find me there because I was hiding inside him. And I knew that he won't look for me there. This is what Vamanamurthy said to him. That's one. Leave that behind. Now you go to Vrigasura story. You remember Vrigasura? One who got this blessing from Lord Shiva, if I put my head on anybody, the head should blast off. Right? This is at the end of the 10th canto. You will see that story there. So this Vrigasura chasing Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva is running, Vrigasura is chasing him. They ran and ran and ran. Finally, they reached Vaikuntham. Vrigasura got there to Vaikuntham. Then Krishna takes the form of a brahmachari, comes there and speaks to Vrigasura and tells Vrigasura that, who are you chasing? You're not going to find him. First mistake you made is that you have taken his shelter, Lord Shiva's shelter. And you can never trust that person. You know, and he abused Shiva in front of Vrigasura. And finally made Vrigasura to put hand on his own head and his head blasted off. And that is the end of Vrigasura. So that incident also is happening in Vaikuntham. So from all these things, this is where Bhagavatam requires the support of the Upanishads. Upanishads are saying to us, actual liberation is when you are get free from the bodily identity. Otherwise, you are not liberated. Bodily identity is caused by the modes of nature. It's not prarabdham. It's modes of nature. So, modes of nature is so important, which is maya, isn't it? Sattvagunam, rajagunam, tamagunam is modes of nature, which is maya. Till you are free from that, you cannot say you are liberated. Salokyam, sarshti, samipyam, sarupyam, sayujyam, the five kinds of liberation, according to Srimad Bhagavatam, they are not accepted as proper liberation. Proper liberation is only mukti hi tanyadha rupam surubena vyavasthiti, which is in line with Upanishads. Now you see the problem. So when you read Srimad Bhagavatam, you will have all these questions coming up in your mind. How come you connect these? In one place it's spoken one way, in another place it's spoken in a different way. How do you come to compromise these things? So this is the another issue. I will only give you three. One about the liberation, one I have spoken before. Now the last one, the third one is, it was in our mind all the time. It's not now, it's happened long ago. It is not easy to get fixed in chanting the holy name. Do you know why? Problem is this. Chanting holy name is a very simple process, isn't it? When you think about it. And they are telling us that this is enough to go back to Krishna and to create that faith in the holy name on day one, not even day one, for years and years, it's been very difficult. Very, very difficult. And you say to people something, they'll say, just chant Hare Krishna and be happy. Or an answer like that, they'll tell you. There was no proper explanation to us any time what this holy name is so special about. Nobody told us that in a way that it should be presented to people. It was never spoken like that. Then they will say, oh, it's all Lord Chaitanya's mercy. That's enough. And nothing else is okay. So you start thinking, well, if this secret was not known to before 500 years, anybody, if it was a trade secret or something that was never revealed, whereas chanting holy name is spoken in the Vedam, it is spoken in so many other places as well, but only it has become relevant now. And how come that when such an easy process was available, why did people go and do this Ashtanga Yogam in Himalayas, living there in the huts and performing such a severe austerities and penances? Ashtanga Yogam is very difficult, isn't it? You know. And other process like Jnanamargam, more still difficult. And then the Karma Yogam process, more difficult, where you have to free yourself from the aham and mama, kartrutvam, bhoktrutvam, you have to withdraw from all that. So, it is difficult to develop that faith in the holy name easily. It's not easy. And you keep inquiring about it from people, that why is holy name special? What is the Krishna's holy name so special about it? So, on this issue, we have to ask many, many people who are chanting a lot in every day. What is that keeping them going like that, to chant the holy name? So it's after asking several people to get an answer, they had referred to sixth canto, Ajamila story. So it is only when we heard that Ajamila's story in the Bhagavatam, we started realizing why the holy name is special. Particularly, the discussion between Yamadudas and the Vishnududas, and then Yamadharma Raja talking to Yamadudas. If you go through that, which we have discussed, and you will understand why is chanting the holy name is different than all other process. Till you understand that difference, you won't feel that commitment. Loyalty. Always you are chanting because you are told to chant. 16 rounds, yes, 16 rounds. We chanted like that. But not knowing the importance of it, what we are doing. And what is, how does holy name works? We want to know that, isn't it? You see Bhagavatam. Throughout Bhagavatam, one thing is very prominent. All the kings were performing, their sadhana was yagam. Is it not? Yudhishthira Maharaj performed the 3 Ashwamedham. Parikshit Maharaj performed Ashwamedham. Prithu Maharaj performed Ashwamedham. Mahabali performed Ashwamedham. All the kings, if you look in the Bhagavatam, they were all performing Ashwamedham, which is very demanding energy-wise, time and people to please Krishna. It was through Ashwamedham they were pleasing Krishna. If this holy name was available, why they didn't choose it? And they had the best advisors, were they not? All the rishis were very close with Yudhishthira. Daumya, Bharadwaj, there's a whole list there. And you saw all the rishis who came to see of Parikshit. Isn't it? At the end of last chapter in the first canto. You remember? Specifically, they have listed all the rishis who had come to see Parikshit at the time. Who are they? Atri, Vasishta Maharshi, Chyavana Maharshi, Sharadwan, Arishtanemi, Bhrigu, Angiras, Parashara, Vedavyas Maharshi's father, Gadhi, then Parashuram, with all his disciples, and Indraprandam, Idmavaho, Uthathyan, Medhadini, Devala, Ashtishena, Bharadvaj, Gaudama, Pipalada Maharshi, Maitreya Maharshi, Aurva Maharshi, Kavasha Maharshi, Kumbhayoni, Agastya Maharshi, and Vedavyasa Maharshi, and Narada Maharshi. All these people had come. So, practically, Parikshit had access to all of them, if he wanted to take advice from them. Equally, Yudhishthira Maharaj. They were all familiar with all these rishis, right? In spite of all that, they didn't choose this path of chanting the holy name.
So these doubts will come in your mind. Naturally, it is quite natural when you are studying a book and you are looking at all the history of the Bhagavatam, you start thinking that why holy name has been given such an importance when all the other Parikshit and Ashut and Yudhishthira and all other kings, they didn't follow that path. You start doubting. If you look into the conversation between Prithu and the four Kumaras, you will see how it's spoken there. More stress given on Salsangam and other things. Krishna also spoke in the same way. But one thing is there, that only when somebody points out to you, to Bhagavatam, to look at Bhagavatam in a different way, then you start realizing that in every canto, holy name is spoken. Importance of holy name is spoken. In every canto, one or two verses are there to speak about the holy name. But more clarity you get it when you hear this discussion between Yamadharmaraja and Yamadudas, and Yamadudas and Vishnududas. So my request is, if you please go back and listen to that classes of Ajamila Moksham, Ajamila story, you will get a better understanding why chanting the holy name is important. And why that is the... it is completely a different way of approaching Krishna, this holy name. It's not through yagam, homam, yogi, all other things, all written off there. This holy name process has a different, which is comes from the Bhagavata Dharmam. It comes from the Bhagavata Dharmam. So, you have to remember, you will see when you hear that classes, that in Yamadharma Raja could not chastise his Yamaduda for not bringing Ajamila. Why? Because whatever Yamadudas were spoken, they were also correct, because they were talking based on Vaidika Dharma. Therefore, whatever they spoke was very much in order. Whatever Vishnududas were spoken were based on Bhagavata Dharma. So, basically, between Vaidika Dharmam and Bhagavata Dharmam, this holy name has come from the Bhagavata Dharmam. Whereas everything what Yudhishthira, Parikshit, Prithu Maharaj, Prachina Barhis, Mahabali and were doing was based on the Vaidika Dharmam. That is the difference. So, till you understand all these things, your mind is confused. You are thinking that this is better than the other and this is easier than the other. Why they didn't do it if it was so easier? But Bhagavata Dharma was spoken to this world by Krishna himself. And that too 5000 years ago, after Krishna spoke Bhagavata Dharma, when it came through Srimad Bhagavatam. And that is how holy name has come. So you will get a better understanding if you listen to those classes about Ajamila story. Yeah. So, this morning I have spoken now 2-3 things, isn't it? Just to give you an idea that how difficult Srimad Bhagavatam is. I have only told you 3 things now. There are hundreds more to talk from Srimad Bhagavatam in the same way. And you will also have to think, and through this you will find doubts coming inside and you have to find the answer to them. And when you get the answer, you find Bhagavatam interesting. That's when you find Bhagavatam interesting. Because otherwise, it's not like any other scripture, literature. It creates this feeling inside, you want to know, what is it all about? And therefore, when you are studying Srimad Bhagavatam, there is so many questions going to come. And today what we will do is, one interesting topic which has always been very, illuminating or very interesting to devotees is this fifth canto. Is it not? The fifth canto. So, we'll talk about that today and probably tomorrow also. And then we'll go into our original subject where we started, Atmatattva Prapti. Yeah? So, I'm just saying this. Why I'm saying fifth canto is to explain that Srimad Bhagavatam, if you just thinking that by reading it you will understand it, you will understand something here and there, but you won't feel any connection with it. That's the problem. In order to feel that connection with Bhagavatam, Bhagavatam is nothing but Upanishad's message, but spoken in a different way. Because after, you see, when Vedavyas came here, Vedavyas is Krishna himself, he realized that there is a problem here, serious problem. Dwapara Yugam is over, he came at the end of Dwapara Yugam. And Kali Yugam is coming, and he realized that these Upanishads are hard nut to crack for the Kali Yugam people. People in the Kali Yugam won't find it easy to read or understand that. So he took all the Upanishads and churned it himself, within himself, and summarized the whole Upanishad's message into Brahma Sutram or Vedanta Sutram, again in the sutra form. There is totally 555 sutrams in the Brahma Sutram. And he left it there. Then he wrote Mahabharatam, and again he couldn't get through the message. So it is after that he compiled Bhagavatam, which you know we have spoken before, how Bhagavatam came in with the true Narada Maharshi and all that. So when he compiled Bhagavatam, what was going through his thoughts, most of it was concerned how to present the truth to the world, to bring them to realize that we are not this body. He is doing all these things to make us convinced, to convince us that we are not the body. That's all it is. Because talking to us, he realized that it's not going to work. Because we are such people that million times even if you hear, still we will go after the body. Body is our main identity, isn't it? That includes both gross and the subtle body. Both. Gross and subtle body. So it is after that he compiled Bhagavatam in a particular way, through Katha, Studi, Upadesham, like that. Katha was written for one purpose, to bring Studi in. Studi is the purpose, because it is through Studi lot of the message is coming through. Katha is only the background for that. It is through Katha the Studis are coming out, right? Because if Katha is not there, Studi, if you simply write Studi one after the other, people won't read it. They will say, oh, what does it all mean to us? But when you put it through Katha, people have little interest in that. Kunti Studi, for example. So for that you have to say all what happened when Krishna came to Hastinapur and the meeting with the Pandavas and Krishna, and then how the suffering Kunti Devi was suffering with the children in the forest for many years, and all that. All that background was spoken. And then suddenly Krishna, Vedavyas brings this Kunti Studi there. And it is through Kunti Studi we get an understanding of Krishna more than from all the history before that. So Mahabharata was brought inside, and then Kunti Studi was spoken. And then straight after that he put Bhishma Studi also. So Kunti Studi and Bhishma Studi are the first two studies in the Bhagavatam which will make us think a little bit, because both those studies have some messages. Aham and Mama, to free yourself from that, right? Kunti Studi is mentioned because it's her problem. What is that? Attachment. Is it not? Ahangaram is not there in Kunti. Ahangaram has all left her long ago. But attachment is very strong. That's why she said like that too. That Sneha Vasha Mimam Chindi Dridam Pandushu Vrishnishu. Please break this attachment in my heart with Pandavas and the Vrishnis, and free me from this bondage. Whereas for Bhishma, it is the other thing, Ahangaram inside. First of all, Kshatriya. Secondly, a royal person. Naturally, that controlling nature, Rajogunam, is very strong there. And he requires help from Krishna that he has to surrender that Ahangaram to Krishna. So asking Krishna to help to get rid of that ego from inside. So like this, the message is given through different studies in different times, and that's why you find several other studies. Gajendra Studi, famous in the Bhagavatam, all about householders. It's basically a katha spoken, But basically it's a story of a householder. That elephant, Gajendra, and the story centered around him is to make us conscious that look, this is your situation in this world. Yatha grihi, he says there. Yatha grihi, like a householder, he says. How householder try to enjoy in this life, in this world, with a wife and children and family and all that. And in that process, how he suffers at the end and leaves this world completely in distress. He leaves this world at the end. All those things are there in Gajendra's study. Similarly, other studies also. You saw Prahlada's study, Dhruva's study, Akruira's study. And it's a list of studies all over. But to keep all that studies together, katha is there for that. For that purpose, katha was spoken. So, that is in the Bhagavatam. Now, coming to fifth canto, why I was saying this was that understanding Bhagavatam is not easy. Let me keep saying this again. Because if only you knew the difficulty in resolving these issues, what is in there. You can read it, you can think something, and then you will say that, oh, I can't understand anything, head and tail of it, and I leave it like that. You can lose like that. That's one way. The other option is that you read it again, until it is clear in your head, don't move to the next one. Or when you have questions, keep thinking about it, write it down, and keep it in your mind. When Krishna gives you an opportunity, you will get the answer from somewhere, or Krishna will give you from within the answer also. And that is the way to get closer to Bhagavatam. And if you don't get closer to Bhagavatam like that, you may find that after some time you lose the interest in the Bhagavatam. So, any verse in the Bhagavatam, if you take, whichever verse you take in the Bhagavatam, if you try to understand that verse and try to explain that verse, you have to be very, very careful about it. Because if you look into Bhagavatam, the Mahalmyam, glories of Bhagavatam, in the Padmapuranam, what it says about Bhagavatam is that you should not jump from one verse to another till you are clear with that. With the verse you are looking at, till you are clear in your own mind what that verse is saying. Don't go into the next one. See what Narada Maharshi said about that? 65 verse in the second chapter. There are 6 chapters from Padmapuranam in the glorifying Srimad Bhagavatam. So in the second chapter, 65 verse 65 says, Srimal Bhagavadalabal Talkadham Bodhayishyat Bodhameshyadi Talkada Satu Vedartha Shloke Shloke Pade Pade. Shloge, shloge, pade, pade, it says. Verse by verse, word by word, you should look at and think about it before you go into the next one. Because Narada Maharshi is saying this. If Narada Maharshi had to say this, he understands what he is saying. And that was... So there, you can see... It's not that one verse, one story. That is not how Bhagavatam is compiled, right? In each verse, something from the Vedam is spoken. From the Vedam, something is brought in, right? Not only in verses, even in each word in the Bhagavatam, there is some connection with the Vedam. First of all, Sri Shuka Brahmarshi spoke Srimad Bhagavatam in the Samadhi state, you know. It was not spoken in the vacant state or dream state or deep sleep. No, it was spoken in the Samadhi state. Throughout Bhagavatam you will find this. He was in Samadhi when he was speaking Bhagavatam to Parikshit. Now and then in Samadhi state he will wake up and Parikshit will ask some questions. And then he will go back into Samadhi. So many instances you will find he falls into Samadhi again. So, that is the reason why it is mentioned here, shloge, shloge, pade, pade. Verse by verse, word by word, he said. So, in order to make this understand to us, this what he said here, shloge, shloge, pade, pade, some indication is there in the Bhagavatam, in the first verse itself. the first verse itself. There is an indication of that in the first verse itself. This shloke shloke pade pade. Why? Look at this way. That first of all it says Vedartham. Vedam is brought into Bhagavatam. Vedartham is spoken there, right? So when you are analyzing Vedam, the message of the Vedam, Vedartha Vicharam, it is called. Great scholars and pandits and all that, they discuss Vedam like that. It is called Vedartha Vicharam. Artha Vicharam means that what does Vedam saying, what does it mean by Vedam saying something? What does it mean? And it has to be justified by the statements from Upanishads, statements from the Puranam, Bhagavad Gita, everything. It has to be in line with that, right? So, Bhagavatam begins with this statement. What is that? Janmadhyasya yataha, isn't it? Janmadhyasya yadonnoyadhyadharadas, right? So, when you are analyzing Vedartham, the devotees will have a lot of doubts in their mind. Vedartha vicharam, right? For devotees, I'm saying. Because devotees are not always scholars, are they? So, they are just becoming a devotee. So, devotees will have a lot of questions and doubts in their mind. And similarly, for people who are very inquisitive to understand Srimad Bhagavatam, they will also have the doubts, right? So, in order to clarify that and clear that doubt, the message of the Vedam, to make it a little more easier for us, he compiled this Brahma Sutra, Vedanta Sutra. So, Vedam, you remember our classes during the Janmashtami, where we spoke about dividing the Vedam into four and the different components of the Vedam. Niruktam, Chandasa, Jyotisham, Kalpam, Vyakaranam and all that. Six things, right? So, there we have spoken a few things about it. You may or may not remember, but if you want to go back and listen to that classes, you will understand Vedam, where what is a Veda, how Vedam is controlling Bhagavatam. This is what I am saying. How Vedam is controlling Bhagavatam. So, there he said that Vedanta Sutram or Brahma Sutram he compiled. Who? Vedavyasa Maharshi. What he basically did was, the knowledge in the Vedam he compiled into Sutram form and made this in a very summary form. And the first Sutram is Athado Brahma Jnasa in there. And the second Sutram is Janmadhyasya Yataha. Like that, it goes like that, right? Tattva Samanvaya. There is three, four words, like the beginning one. So what he did, he took all those Brahma Sutram words meant for explaining the Vedam and brought them into Bhagavatam and put them in the first verse itself. All the four sutrams from the Brahma Sutra, he took them and put them in the first verse itself. Why did he do that? The reason is that you don't have any doubt that Bhagavatam is independent of the Vedam. To make it clear to us, that was the reason why he did that. It's very clear to that. That to make us aware Bhagavatam's connection with the Vedam. If you start taking Bhagavatam out of the Vedam and start making your own conclusions about it, then it is not acceptable for the Vedic authorities. Bhagavatam is, therefore what he did was, he said that Bhagavatam he began with that. That means the second sutram in the Vedanta Sutram, Janmadhyasya Yataha, he brought it and put it as the first word in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Then Athado Brahma Jijnyasa, he brought that and put in there. Janmadhyasya Yataha, then Shastra Yonitvad and Tattva Samanvayad. These four sutras. Which one? Athado Brahma Jijnyasa, Janmadhyasya Yataha, Shastra Yonitvad, Tattva Samanvayad. These are the four sutras that comes in the first verse. These four sutras. And they are the first four sutras in the Vedanta Sutram also. What we will do, this first verse on its own, we will talk about it another time in details. How complex that verse is, that first verse. It is nothing but Vedam and Upanishads in that first verse itself. Just to tell us that don't think Bhagavatam is independent. Bhagavatam is supposed to be the Bhashyam, commentary of the Brahma Sutram, isn't it? So it has to have a connection with Brahma Sutram. It can't be independent. So that's what he is saying here. So out of these four sutram, he started Bhagavadam with the second sutram, Janmadhyasetaha, right? So what that indicates is, Srimal Bhagavadam is nothing but the message of the Vedam. Message of the Vedam. Now, added to that, what else did he do? To prove it to us that it is strongly connected with the Vedam. In Bhagavadam, you will find two places, this word, Satyam Param Dhimahi, isn't it? In the beginning and in the end. You remember? The first verse begins, ends with Satyam Param Dhimahi. Tene Brahma Hridaya Adigavaye Muhyandiyal Suraya Tejo Varimurdam Yathavinimayo Yatratri Sargo Mrusha Dhamna Svena Sada Nirastha Kogam Satyam Param Dhimahi. Satyam Param Dhimahi. Similarly, Tudruvena Naradaya Muniye Krishnaya Tudruvina Yogindraya Sadatmanandam Bhagavadradaya Karnidam Tachuddam Vimalam Vishokam Amrutam Satyam Param Dhimahi. So Bhagavadam begins with Satyam Param Dhimahi, Bhagavadam finishes with Satyam Param Dhimahi, is it not? So where is the Satyam Param Dhimahi coming from? Satyam Param Dhimahi, Dhimahi is the last word from the Gayatri, isn't it? Gayatri Mandram it is, right? So Gayatri Mandram comes from the Vedam, and all the Mahamandram, that Gayatri Mandram, which is in the Vedam, he brought that into Bhagavadam to stress this point that Bhagavadam is very authorized and bona fide. It has got the complete backing of the Vedam behind it and the Upanishads, right? So, and he put those words in the beginning and at the end, the first words and the last words as well. So, what he's saying is that beginning and the end, the message is saying what is in the Vedam. It's not different, right? So, normally, when you are interpreting the words of a Mahatma, when a Mahatma says something, even when you interpret his words, how careful you have to be. Because you don't know what exactly he meant by that. Unfortunate thing is, there is a big problem here. Sometimes what happens is, often devotees do this, that in the Facebook and in the other places, right? They will pick up one or two lines what Prabhupada said. Yeah? And they will put that and establish that this is what Prabhupada wanted. They'll put it like that in front of you. And you start thinking, oh, Prabhupada said like that? Because of your bhakti for him, devotion, you start accepting it like that, as it is, spoken like that. And sometimes those statements may not be exactly what he meant. Why? I'll tell you why. Some things, you have to read it with other things what he said. If you don't read it together, this alone on its own will confuse you, will cause confusion. It always happens like that. Many times I come across this problem often because of this Facebook, and devotees also put a lot of things there, and sometimes they pick up something what happened somewhere in some place in some particular time, something Prabhupada said, and they just put that in and said, this is what Prabhupada meant, he said. And when you read through that, you start thinking, is this right? It doesn't look that Prabhupada will say such a thing, because there are so many other things Prabhupada has said. He has ignored all that, just taken this one issue and started harping on that, and then confuses everybody with that. So most often, people who don't think like that, they start jumping up and down. Oh, this is what Prabhupada wanted. Prabhupada said, you don't have to do anything except distribute the books. Or he say, you don't have to do anything except distribute prasadam. And something Prabhupada would have said about prasadam distribution or book distribution, and they'll put those words alone and say to you that this is all it is, there's nothing else to do apart from that. That's not how it is. That's what I'm saying. When you are trying to understand a Mahatma's words even, You got to understand so many other aspects of it, what he has spoken. Till you understand that, to jump into conclusions like that, based on one quotation from spoken somewhere at some time, and act on that, may not be the actual conclusion for that. This is something you have to think about. So, even when you are talking about a Mahalpa's case, if you have to be careful, what to talk about, talking about Vedam. Imagine, if from a Mahalpa's words, when you have to interpret in this way, that how much careful you have to be, Vedic literature, particularly Vedam, Upanishads and all that, when you are trying to explain that to others, how careful you have to be. That's the message, main thing, right? For example, I don't know how much you have thought about this, why we discussed Vedam in that year in the Janmashtami time. The reason was this: Vedam, to understand, first you have to study all the Vedangam, the six Vedangam. Unless you have studied that, you can't enter into Vedam. Because you understand Vedam through this Vedangam, the six, which means Chandasa, Vyagaranam, Shiksha, Kalpam, Jyotisham, Niruktam. If you have mastered all that, and then you can start studying Vedam. Otherwise, because without their help, you can't understand Vedam. This is the problem, right? So, only if you have studied them well, that you will understand the meaning of this sound of the Vedic literature, right? And you will understand the meaning. Similarly, you also have to know the how you pronounce them, the words. Ucharana Shastram, it's called. Because certain words in the Vedam, when you speak about them, even if you look into the dictionary, you won't get the meaning. You won't find the meaning because those words are not there in the dictionary. The Sanskrit language, you can make up words together with adding up many things, right? You will understand that. For that, you have to study Niruktam. So only if you have studied Niruktam, you will understand that. So there, you will see the meaning spoken. When you combine certain words, how the meaning comes out. It's a very complex thing, right? Sometimes you will find in one chapter verses one letter extra, and some verses one letter less than the other. So, to know that which letter is short there, and where it's the excess one, to notice all that, it takes a long time to understand. I mean, what I'm saying all this is just to make us aware that how difficult it is to understand Vedam. It is difficult, right? So, if you can't even speak the Vedic hymns properly, the sound itself is so complex, and even that is very difficult, then what to talk about the meaning of what those Vedic hymns meant, right? What I'm saying is, it's such a serious thing it is. It is for very serious people that these things are right. Right. So, that is why Puranams, all Puranam and Srimad Bhagavatam, it is called the fifth Vedam. Fifth Vedam, right? And when Bhagavatam was compiled and presented to this world, right, it has become more complicated. Do you know why? If you look into Bhagavatam itself, you will see there that people got more confused. Why? Why I'm saying this is that how difficult Bhagavatam is. Vedam itself is difficult, right? But when Bhagavatam came out, it became more complicated. Why? Because if you look into the third chapter, in the first canto, Sudha Goswami there, you mentioned something interesting. Sudha Goswami is saying there that he's asking, he's saying that, I'll speak to you Srimad Bhagavatam, he said. Oh, Sudha Goswami says, I'll speak to you Srimad Bhagavatam. And this Bhagavatam, he says, 42nd verse. If you look at the 42nd verse. Sarva vede diha asanam saram saram samudradam sadu samshravayamasa maharajam parikshidam. This is what he said. That sarva vede diha asanam saram saram samudradam. All Vedam and Itihasam, its a saram is Srimad Bhagavatam, he said. So it became more difficult, isn't it? You know, even after giving all explanations, it's not working for us. Now, if somebody tells you in summary form, how much will ever help us? No? Sarva Vede Itihasanam saram saram samudradam, he's saying. All the Vedam, all the Itihasams, even if it is given in detail and spoken, and we find that difficult to understand. Suppose you are only told the summary of it, how much you will understand? That is the problem. Sarva Vede Itihasanam saram saram samudradam, you say. It is only saram saram, nothing else. Only the message, the essence is spoken in the Bhagavatam. That is the problem for us. That is why we have all the problem in studying Bhagavatam. Because only the message is spoken. Saram. Not once he has said. Saram, saram he is saying. Only saram. Only the very essence is spoken in the Bhagavatam. And therefore we are struggling because of that. That is the problem. Right? So, that is why Bhagavatam is such a serious topic. Because it is only saram. Now you understand why I am saying this? That because it's only the saram, as I said before, in our level we have these doubts, right? But when you go deeper into Bhagavatam, the doubts that will come from then, you could be spending the whole lifetime solving it, and you won't find an answer there. It is difficult. Bhagavatam is like that. That is the very nature of Bhagavatam. How people get attracted to Bhagavatam? People who are thoughtful. It is for them, and people who analyze these things, And this understood, after all, Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And if he has spoken, you can't take it in a light way. Whatever he has spoken to Uddhava, whatever he has spoken to other rishis and the gopis and others, and the message he has spoken, it will have a lot of depth in that. Till we understand that, we won't be able to appreciate it, what he has said. Isn't it? So, here he is saying here, Vedanta and in several Puranams, this glories of Bhagavatam is spoken. Right? So, particularly, we talked about two Puranams. One Padma Puranam, the 6 chapters, which we will discuss later, some other time, when we find time. If no other interruption happens, like the way it happens now, if we get a smooth time for a few years, and we have time, and that 6 chapters are there. And then we also talked about the 4 chapters on the Skanda Puranam, about Bhagavatam's glories before. In some few classes we spoke about that. Then there is also spoken in the Garuda Puranam a little bit, not much. There is also reference to Devi Bhagavatam about Srimad Bhagavatam spoken there. Right? So, in all conclusions, the message is this, Vedanta Sutram or Brahma Sutram, its commentary is Bhagavatam. Its commentary is Srimad Bhagavatam. And the next, another time you will see that this Bhagavatam is nothing but a summary of the Mahabharatam also. It's spoken like that in another place, right? So, and in another place, that is in the Garuda Puranam it says. Another place says, Gayatri Mantram, its commentary is Bhagavatam. In another place it is spoken like that. And all of that comment, all of that statements suits Bhagavatam. It all fits in with Bhagavatam, right? Because Bhagavatam was compiled by taking the essence of all these literature. Mahabharatam essence is taken. And Upanishad's essence is taken. Other Puranams like Narasimha Puranam, Vamana Puranam, Kurma Puranam, Garuda Puranam, and Varaha Puranam, all Puranams he has taken. Subrahmashi has taken the message. What he thought is important. Similarly, you saw Ramayana, he compiled it in 2 chapters. He took the message from there, from Ramayana. And Mahabharatam, he brought it in the first canto itself. Mahabharatam. So wherever what was necessary, he has picked up from all the Upanishads and the Itihasams and everything, and brought it together and gave us Srimad Bhagavatam. And that is why it is so difficult for us to get through into it, right? So, mainly the essence has been taken in, right? He did this because he was not satisfied by compiling everything else, right? It is at that time, Sri Narada Maharshi came there, and you know that he came to to Narada Maharshi, and Narada Maharshi came there because Lord Brahma told him to go and talk to Vedavyas, right? And that you will see there. That in the first canto, in the fifth chapter, that eighth verse, Sri Narada Vacha, Bhavada Anudida Prayam, Yasho Bhagavato Malam, Yone Vaso Na Tushyada, Manyeta Darshanam Khilam. Bhavada Anudida Prayam, Yasho Bhagavato Amalam. You have not glorified Krishna, he said. Yasho Bhagavato Amalam. That is the only thing that is missing in your writing. Everything else is perfect. But this one thing, you haven't done enough. Glorifying Krishna's glories, which you didn't do very well. And when he said that it was not glorified enough, that is why in Srimad Bhagavatam you find Krishna has been given such a position. And glorified Krishna in such a big way in the Bhagavatam, right? So, also you will find that this Bhagavatam in the first chapter of the glorifications itself, he mentioned there what Bhagavatam is. So, if you look both into Bhagavatam Mahalpyam, which is the first chapter, and there you will see what he said was the 11th and the 12th verse. What they say, what Padmuranam says about Bhagavatam. Kalavyalam khagrasa trasa narnasha hetave Srimad Bhagavatam Shastram Kalau Kirena Bhashidam. And he said, Edasvad Abaram Kinchil Manashuddhi na Vidyade. Janmandare bhavel punyam tada bhagavadam labhe. Why these two verses are important? He is saying there that kalavyala mukhagrasam trasa nurnasha hedave. When somebody is attacked by the time, means all of us, isn't it, on the way to leaving the body, trasa nurnasha hedave. For their benefit, this Shastram called Srimad Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam Shastram Kalau in the age of Kali Kirana Bhashidam. It was spoken, right? And he said, added to that, he also said this, Edasmal Abaram Kinjal Manashuddhi Navidyade. There is no other alternative to get Chitta Shuddhi except to take Srimad Bhagavatam. If you study Srimad Bhagavatam, he is saying here, Edasmal Abaram Kinchil Na Manashuddhi Manashuddhi Na Vidyade. You won't get purified in the mind. And when the mind is not purified, it is not possible to understand what Shukla Brahmarshi is saying. You remember I mentioned before also that Shukla Brahmarshi, in every chapter or every episode, you can say, somewhere he will say something. After giving the story and study and everything, he will give his own observation somewhere in one verse. It's there in all throughout the Bhagavatam. And our problem is to find out what that is, what that verse is, and what that verse is saying, and how to relate that, his observation, with the story and the study, both, right? So here in Padmapuranam it is saying, this Bhagavatam is edasmal abaram kinchil manashuddhi na vidyate. There is no alternative for this. Just like Krishna said that I entered into Bhagavadam, isn't it? He said to Uddhava, I entered into Bhagavadam. When Uddhava asked Krishna to stay, Krishna said, I can't stay because I have taken a human form. And human form, I have already decided maximum lifespan is 125 years. So I cannot stay here. This was the reason why he left. Otherwise Krishna could have stayed. So he made the rule and he himself started breaking the rule. Then it doesn't make sense. So because he came in the human form and he spent 125 years here, he said, I have to go. Uddhava said, what will happen to those who come afterwards? He said, for their benefit, it will come later in the Padmapuranam story, it will come there, that Krishna thought about this. What should he do for the people who are going to come later? How they will hear about the message of the Bhagavadam? He thought about this and he realized that what will remain in this world for end of this world, planet, is the five material elements. Is it not? Earth, water, air, ether and fire. These five material elements will be here for till the end. Whoever comes to this world till the end of this planet, last dissolve happening, devastation happens, these five elements will be there all the time. They will be there. Then Krishna thought, out of these five elements, which one is the most suitable one for Krishna to enter? And he realized it, the one most suitable for that is the sky. He chose the sky. And sky, in its subtle form, is the sound. And that is the reason why Bhagavadam was taken. Do you understand? Why Krishna entered into Bhagavadam? Because Bhagavadam is Shabda Brahmam. And sound is this subtle form of sky. And sky is a material element because all other material elements has come from the sky. You remember? The earth has come from water. Water has come from the fire. Fire has come from the air. Air has come from the sky. So sky is the only element which keeps all the elements together. It is the help of the sky that keeps all the elements together. Krishna decided to enter into sky. Entering sky in its subtle form is sound. Isn't it? Subtle form is the sound. So he entered into the sound form. And that Krishna's entry into sound form is this Srimad Bhagavatam. We won't understand all these things because we are reading it like any other book, thinking that, oh, I got it now. I understood everything. To understand Srimad Bhagavatam, you can spend the whole life analyzing it and you will not get anywhere because it is so complex, Srimad Bhagavatam is. So that is why he says here that Edasmal Abaram Kinjil Manashuddhya Inna Vidyade Janmandare Bhaval Punyam Tada Bhagavadam Labhe. Janmandare Bhaval Punyam. To come in front of Srimad Bhagavadam, you have to have performed so much pious activities in several lifetimes before. Otherwise, you won't come in front of Krishna in the form of Bhagavadam. Janmandare Bhaval Punyam. In many, many lifetimes, something you must have done, Tada Bhagavadam Labhe. Otherwise, you won't come in front of Bhagavadam. Krishna will make sure that some prarabdham will come and keep you out of it, or something else will happen in life, and then you will be running around in this world doing something or the other. And that way the life is gone. Opportunity to hear Srimad Bhagavatam also gone with that. So therefore he is saying here that it is not easy that he says here that for manashuddhi na vidyade. There is no other way to bring that manashuddhi, manashandi inside, because janmandra bhavet punyam tada bhagavadam labhet. So that is why then it mentioned in the Bhagavadam that you remember it talked about the 10 symptoms of the Mahapuranam. Sargam visargam sthanam poshanam udhim anandaram ishani gada nirodho mukti ashrayam and all those things. And you have to know all those things as well. Vedyam vastava matra vastu shivadam. You remember, he said there, isn't it? Dharma projida kaida votra varamo normal saranam sadam vedyam vastavam atra vastu shivadam. means whatever that is spoken in the Vedantam, what is spoken in the Upanishads, what you will get from all those Upanishads, that what does that mean? Highest knowledge of the self. That is the message of Bhagavatam. That is the message of Bhagavatam. So I think we'll have a short break and then we'll continue after that. Chedo darpanam arjanam bhavamaha davagni narvapanam shreyakaidava chandriya vidaranam vidhyavadhu jivanam anandam budivardhanam pratipada purnamrita swadanam sarvapna subhanam param vijayate shri krishna sankirtanam namnamakari bahuda nija sarva shakti tatra arpita nimida smaranena kala ega drushi dava kripa bhagavan mamabhi durdaiva midrisha mihajani nanuraga trinarabhi shuni jena tharorabhi sahishnuna amanina manadena kirtaniya sadahari Nadhanam najanam nasundarim kavidam va jagadisha kamahe mama janmani janmani shvare bhavadad bhaktirahai dugittui ayi nandadanu jakingaram patitam ammishame bhavam budau krubayatava pada pangajastita dhuli sadrasham vijindaya nayanam galadashudharaya vadanam gadgadaruddhaya giram Pulagair nijidam kadavahu tavannama grahane bhavishyadi yuga idam nimeshena chachusha pravisha idam shunya idam jagal sarvam govinda grahe name ashlishava padaradam pinashtumam adarshanam karmahadam karotuva yadha tadava vidadadulam pato malpranadha sunayevana para Sarvatra Govinda Nama Sangirtanam Govinda Govinda. So, the important thing is to know the difficulty of understanding Bhagavatam. Why it is difficult? That's what we are talking about. Because it is the essence of the Vedam, because it is essence of the Brahma Sutram, because it's essence of the Mahabharatam and so many other Puranams as well, and only the Saram is taken, Saram, Saram, Samudritam. Because of this, only the Saram, it becomes much more difficult to get a grasp of it. Saram, it's alright, it's not like a subject where you have summarized to such an extent that unless you get hold of all other information connected with it, it is not possible to feel that you are satisfied with it, the explanations, right? So, similarly, so he said that the Upanishads jnanam, the knowledge of the Upanishads is in the Bhagavatam, he said. And it is definitely there. When Krishna has spoken to Uddhava, Ekadasha Skandam, it is complete Upanishads it is. What he has spoken there. But what happens is, when you start reading that, you can't feel any connection with it. You are so far away from our position, our situation. Isn't it? Similarly, you can see, keeping Varnashrama Dharmam important, and without any doubt that Varnashrama Dharmam is necessary, keeping that in the picture, right? The truth is spoken in the Bhagavatam. Keeping Varnashrama, because you can see five chapters in the seventh canto, the last five chapters in the seventh canto, two chapters in the 11th canto, Krishna is also speaking, Sri Narada Maharshi is also speaking in importance of Varnashrama Dharma. So, Varnashrama Dharma is not rejected. So, keeping Varnashrama Dharma in the picture very much, it has spoken. Bhagavad Dharma, this Bhagavatam has been compiled, right? Keeping Varnashrama Dharmam, Sanadana Dharmam has been spoken. Now, the problem what we are discussing, this word Dharmam itself is confusing to everyone. What does this mean? Dharmam means, isn't it? So many different definitions you will find, and throughout Bhagavatam, this word Dharmam comes. We have got Varnashrama Dharmam, Bhagavad Dharmam, Then, what else? Different dharmam is coming again and again and again. Sixth kandu, if you look, you will see there, Veda pranihido dharma. Who says? Yama Dharmaraja says that. What is spoken in the Vedam is dharma. Now, how do you understand that? We like everything given to us in a summary, Q&A or what is it called? We want guidance at every step. In everything what we do, we need guidance. What should I do? This question comes. So, dharmam itself is very confusing, the word dharma. And in Srimad Bhagavatam, dharmam is the main topic discussed. Dharmam is the pathway to go to Krishna. Without dharmam, you can't go there. Dharmam is the message, right? So, in this situation, only thing what we can do is first to understand where this dharmam is coming from. Like you see, in Bhagavatam, the first word is about the truth, which is Janmadhyay Seva, that verse is about the truth, isn't it? The nature of the absolute truth. That's what is mainly spoken in that verse. That verse we have to talk about for one or two classes in detail. Then you will know how that verse has come together. That verse has been commented by all the great authorities in the Srimad Bhagavatam for 64 different ways or something. It has got its own explanations to it. It's such a complex verse that is, and the whole Bhagavatam is dependent on that one verse, Janmadhyay Seva. Then immediately after that, Vedavyas spoke about dharma. So that means Vedavyas, you can see how important dharma is. Dharma projita kaidavotra paramo. The dharma that is spoken in this Bhagavatam is not kaidava dharma, cheating religion. It is a proper. So, but sometimes this doubt comes in the mind. What does this dharma mean? Where is it coming from? Isn't it? And what exactly it means by that? And all these things we need to discuss some other time. Not today. One or two classes it will take to understand how the rishis coined this word dharma. How the rishis coined that word dharma. And what did they expect others to understand by the word dharma? Yeah. So, you can call it so many things. In the Bhagavatam, it comes in the sixth canto. When Yama Dharmaraja spoke about that. Veda pranihido dharmam. Everything not mentioned in the Vedam. Adharmastu vibharyayam. What is not spoken in the Vedam is adharma. And Swayambhu iti shishruma. And from Brahma, Lord Brahma has spoken about dharmam. Like that there is a Vedo Narayana Sakshal. It is actually, there is no difference between Vedam and Narayana, Krishna. And dharma is Krishna actually. So, how many times in the Bhagavatam you come across this word dharma? 12th canto, 12th chapter. If you look, you will find interesting there. After discussing whole Srimad Bhagavatam, there is a summary of the whole Bhagavatam in the 12th chapter. That is why when people don't get time to read whole Srimad Bhagavatam, they will just read the 12th chapter of the 12th canto. It is a summary. And what does it say? Namo dharmaya mahade, nama krishnaya vedase, brahmane bhyo namaskritya dharman vaksha sanatanan. The first verse itself is about sanatana dharma. And dharmam namo dharmaya mahade, dharmam I offer my obeisances to dharma. So dharmam is a topic you will come across throughout Bhagavatam in every studi or in Upadesham or in Kathas in different ways. And it has an important bearing on everything, what we do, what we live, how we live our life. We say it should be dharmic, isn't it? Dharmic life, way of life. And from moral point of view, if you look at dharmam, we will say, oh, you shouldn't lie, you shouldn't cheat. That's all a part of Varnashrama dharma. Now, dharma, Varnashrama dharmam is given a lot of importance. Krishna has given, and also Srinarada Maharshi also, and it is in the Vedam. So you can't write it off because it's in the Vedam. So there's no question of writing it off. At the same time, we also get some glimpse of it from Bhagavad Gita. When Krishna said, that Chaturvarnyam Maya Srishtam, Gunakarma Vibhagasha, isn't it? So most of the people, when they read Bhagavad Gita only, without reading, without knowing about this background of Bhagavad Gita, right? Not fully understanding Krishna, they start thinking that Krishna wrote down this Varnashrama Dharma and it has become like a manifesto for the world. What Krishna is saying when he said that, what it means is that it is in the Vedam. And Varnashrama Dharma is a part of the Vedam. And Vedam is me. It's not different from me. This is all what he means by that. How it was brought into this world was done by the society at that time. Originally, when the rishis were present, who were controlling the population at that time, they all together established this system with the help of the kings who ruled the country then. So imagine, that is how it, Krishna didn't come one day and say, look, I got all the details for you about Varnashrama Dharma. You be Brahmana, you be Kshatriya, you be Vaishya. He didn't do that. What he is saying is that it is there in the Vedam. And Vedam has come from me. I am the source of the Vedam. So that way, that's what he means when he said that Chaturvarnyam Maya Srishtam, Gunakarma Vibhagasha. And those things are based on the Gunam and Karma. Right? So what happened now? Everybody has understood that it is qualification is by qualities and the birth. How you decide everything, isn't it? Brahmana's qualities spoken, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra. And if you see these qualities elsewhere, you have to accept them as Brahmanas. Like that it is mentioned there in the Bhagavad Gita, based on the Bhagavad Gita commentary. You go into Bhagavadam and see what Krishna had to say about Varnashrama Dharma. What did he say there? He said, Brahmana's body I have given to him, not for sense gratification. That body is suitable for self-realization, which means he has given importance to birth also. In Bhagavad Gita he spoke in one way. And in the Bhagavadam he is saying a little differently. He is not only speaking about birth. He is saying, I have given this body to him. If he utilizes it properly, all he has to do is to put one more step and he is in the spiritual world. Brahmanasya hi dehoyam kshudragamaya neshyade. Ekadasha skandam, 19th or 20th chapter, you will find that verse. Yeah. So, when you listen to Krishna's words also, it can confusing. You can get confused. And this thought was always in going through my head as well. In here he has spoken like this, there he has spoken like that. And among the acharyas also there is difference of opinion about it. They have approached in a different way. So Varnashrama Dharma has always been a difficult topic. Now, again, if you read Bhagavadam, what Bhagavadam had to say about Varnashrama Dharma, you will see there in the 7th canto, what Sri Narada Maharshi did was, Yudhishthira asked him, how to become a devotee like Prahlada? Yudhishthira was so impressed by Prahlada's qualities, yeah? Born in a demoniac family and coming out with such good qualities. That means Yudhishthira is thinking in his mind, if he is born in a demoniac family, he should be a demon, isn't it? That's what normally you would expect. From demons come from the demoniac families and devotees come from the devotee families. So how come he is like this? So that, to unravel that, Narada Maharshi told him, because Yudhishthira was very interested to hear that. What is that made Prahlada to be a good devotee like that? That's when he comes out and started speaking Varnashrama Dharma. The importance of Varnashrama Dharma, right? So, if you read those 5 chapters, there again you can see, exactly like Shuka Brahmarshi is not very impressed by the householder, Sri Narada Maharshi is also not impressed by the householder. If you read through 5 chapters there, what he did was, he spoke about the brahmachari, he spoke about the sannyasi, and he spoke about the vanaprastham. He didn't talk about householder. So Yudhishthira thought, does that mean that a householder has no much hope in life? This is what he asked him. Then he come back, Narada Maharshi came back and told Yudhishthira in two chapters about householder life. He discussed how an ideal householder should be. And if you read that now, you can see where we are and where they, what he meant. Again, too, obviously he found it difficult to say to the householder, look, this is a hopeless situation. There's not much to look forward to. Come back again here and start another householder life. That's all is on offer. So instead of saying that, he put all the conditions of a householder, how he should be, and mentioned a lot of things there about householder, right? But if you read that, and then if you go into Ekadasi Skandam and read what Krishna had to say about householder, and read that, you will come to the conclusion, it is a mission impossible. We can't do it. It's simply not possible. That householder life, what is spoken there. So, before talking about this Varnashrama Dharmam, what Srinarada Maharshi did was, he said, there is about 30 qualities, he said, which a human being must have to be considered as a human being. To consider somebody as a human being, you need some 30 qualities. He talks about the 30 qualities first. After these 30 qualities, he says, if you are a human being, at least you should have these 30 qualities before. And then, after that, he says about this Varnashrama Dharma. For different groups, Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, what's expected of them. Similarly, Brahmachari, Grastham, Vanaprastham, Sannyasam also. And similarly, when you read Krishna's description of the Sannyasam, Vanaprastham, Garhasyam, and Brahmachari, you won't find one today like that. It's not possible to follow it anymore. No, even in the most orthodox, ultra-orthodox societies, they don't have it anymore. Even they are finding it difficult to do it. That is a different... But the difficulty is that we have modified it and modified it and modified it, saying that this is all possible in Kali Yuga. And we live our life the way we want, and he says that we are following Vedic culture. How far are we following it? So the result also in the same way. You can only expect all these results to come when you are following it strictly. But when you are not following it strictly, then it is very difficult. So what I am saying is that Krishna has spoken about Brahmanyam based on birth as well as on qualities, both. Now to understand that, we have to go back to it and discuss it later sometime. So coming back to this Bhagavatam again, that what is interesting here is that this Sanatana Dharmam, which was based on which Bhagavatam is constructed or written 5,000 years ago, and today also people are finding something interesting in that to study, and finding something there that is attracting people to it. It's not out of propaganda or anything. What I'm saying is that things are changing in this world all the time, isn't it? For example, in Bharatavarsham, there was something like 1,000 years of rule by the, Islamic invasion, and all that happened. They've come and gone, then the British ruled for a few hundred years and all that. But in spite of all that, how is that people are still going back and looking to these books? There is something in these books that they are finding that it is giving some meaning to life. And the rishis were particularly very, very capable in explaining the meaning of life without being touched by nationalism, without being touched by any other conditions, purely from the platform of a spirit soul, an individual, because ultimately we all know that all our connections with this world is through the body. Isn't it? Place of birth or place of language you speak or the community you belong to. And we know within ourselves, when we leave this body, all that connection is broken. It's over with that, isn't it? So if it is like that, then what is the real identity, our real identity? And this is what the rishis have caught on to that. I told you before, the whole world, the creation itself, you can see Krishna never bothered to talk in terms of a nationalism or in any other way, community or anything like that. Purely from the platform of the soul, addressing to individual, that you have a life choice. You have a choice now in life to make. You have come to this human form after passing through so many different bodies. And here is the knowledge for you to direct your life, whichever way you want it, either you can use it or you can reject it. That is how Krishna has put it in front of everybody. He told the same thing to Uddhava and same thing to Arjuna also. So I'm saying that this knowledge, even though 5,000 years ago spoken, how come it survived so long? Is that not surprising? So much other knowledge has come and gone, and people are rejecting it all the time. Here and there a few people may take it, but by and large people have rejected a lot of the other things. But this knowledge, what is based on Sanatana Dharmam, spoken in the Srimad Bhagavatam, people are finding it interesting and attractive. So people are still studying it and writing books, commentaries on that. Right? So when we talked about the Srimad Bhagavatam before, that was in the 12th canto, in the 13th chapter. If you look at those verses we spoken before about Srimad Bhagavatam, we said, he mentions there that Sarva Vedanta Saram Hi. Remember that verse? 12, 13, 12. Sarva Vedanta Saram Hi. It is the Saram or the essence of all the Vedantam. What else? Brahmaatmaigatva Lakshanam. That we actually are not this body. What are we then? Brahmaatma Aigatva Lakshanam. We are Brahmam itself. Brahmaatma Aigatva Lakshanam. Vastu Addidiyam Tannishtam Kaivalyega Prayojanam. We discussed these words in the Bhagavadam class before. If you want to go back and discuss that, right? And then they said that Sarva Veda, again saying in the same, after a few verses, 12, 13, 15, he is repeating this again and again. Sarva Vedanta Saram Hi Shri Bhagavadam Ishyade Tadrasaramrita Truptasya Nanyatrasyal Radikochil. He is saying there that Sarva Vedanta Saram is in the Srimad Bhagavadam, right? And Tadrasa Amrita Truptasya, it's just like drinking the nectar, and na anyatrasal radikochil. Once you have tasted it, you won't have any attraction for anything else in this world. Very categorically saying this at the end of Srimad Bhagavatam, right? You can only, from all these words, you have to think, why are they saying like this? So much stress given. After all, there is whole Vedam, all Upanishads there, Itihasam there, Bhagavatam, Puranams are there. All the 18 Puranams and 18 Upapuranams there. Then we have got all the Smriti there. Then we have got Mahabharatam, Ramayanam. In spite of all that, because the whole essence has come into Bhagavatam, he is saying here, Sarva Vedanta Saram is Srimad Bhagavatam. And that is why it is so difficult to understand. So much conflicts will come and confusion will come when you read Bhagavatam. If it's not coming, then you have to worry about it. If you are not getting any doubts and if you feel that you are comfortable with everything, that means it has not gone in. You have not understood it, the seriousness of the situation. Yeah. So he said that. Then he says, Kshetranam Jaiva Sarvesham Yatha Kashi Anuttama Tadha Purana Vradhanam Srimal Bhagavadam Dvijaha. Then out of all the temples in the world, all the Kshetram, Kashi is more important. Kashi is the most important temple because it is the most ancient temple in the world. Kashi. When it exists, nobody knows. Even when Krishna's time, 5,000 years ago, it was so old. Vishwanatha temple was so old even at that time. So Kashi is considered to be Yatha Kashi Anuttamam Tad Pura. Similarly, he says, the importance of Kashi among the temples, it is the same importance to Bhagavadam among the Puranam. Right? Then of course, conclusion is Srimad Bhagavatam, Puranam Amalam. It is very dear to Vaishnavas. Yad Vaishnavanam Priyam.
Yeah.
Yasmin. The topic that is discussed is Paramahamsa Megam Amalam. Paramahamsa Dharmam. That means liberated souls will relish it. Only liberated souls, Paramahamsas, they will relish it. Yasmin Paramahamsa Megam Amalam Jnanam Param Giyate. That knowledge which is related to the soul, that is what is discussed here. Nothing else. Only that topic that is related to the soul. Amalat Jnanam Param Giyate. That is what is done. Then Yatra Jnana Viraga Bhakti Sahidam Naishkarma Mavishkradam Tachranvan Vibhadan Vijarana Paro Bhaktiya Vimuchir Nara. So if you absorb in Bhagavadam, if you get absorbed in the Bhagavadam, Vairagyam and Bhakti will come to a person. All of them are interconnected. You cannot say anything about that. Bhakti will develop in a heart when the symptom of that is Jnanam and Vairagyam will come into a person's life. Without Vairagyam, Jnanam won't come. Vairagyam is the driving factor behind Jnanam. If Jnanam to become firm inside, like sometimes people say that, oh, I hear all this and it makes sense, everything. But when you get into Vyavaharam, whole thing, shh, gone. And then we say, why is it like this? When I heard all these things, it all made sense. But when it came to dealing with the world outside, nothing is working. We find it very hard, isn't it? So people get this and they don't understand why it is like that. And the reason is this. These three things, Bhakti, Jnanam, Vairagyam, they will always go together. One supports the other. In the Puranam it says, Jnanam, Vairagyam, children of Bhakti. Right? So if there is no proper Vairagyam inside, Jnanam won't stay. Suppose you have understood everything theoretically, but you won't be able to apply it in your life. It won't be possible. Because Vairagyam is not there. And when you need it, it won't be there. When you need it, it won't be there. So what happens is, Jnana Vairagyam, they are together, always together. So Vairagyam is necessary for Jnanam to work. And Vairagyam without Jnanam is also Shushka Jnanam. Shushka Vairagyam it's called. It's useless. Vairagyam and Jnanam work together. And if both Vairagyam and Jnanam is developed inside, then naturally, automatically, Bhakti will be there in that person. So they are together, all the three works together. Right? So, that is why it said that even if you are able to hear one verse from the Bhagavatam properly and able to relish it, Janmandara Bhavet Punyam Srimad Bhagavatam Labhet. Right? So, I am saying all these things only for one reason only, that something we must have done in previous life, all of us, that we are now able to study Bhagavatam and come to front of Bhagavatam and able to listen to it and talk about it. Otherwise this wouldn't have happened, because millions of people in this world are wandering around with so many other ideas in their head. Why this doesn't come happen? This is the reason that Janmandara Bhavet Punyam, it is based on that, it is saying, right? Some Sugridam or whatever must have done, something good we must have done in the past life, right? So, many millions of people never had the opportunity to hear Srimad Bhagavatam, or as I said before, if they have heard it, they got it wrong all and they lost interest. Remember we talked about four kinds of people who hear Bhagavatam and understand it, right? Some people come considered to be like the bird crane. The crane will hear Srimad Bhagavatam, but it will only take the essence from that. Just like it looks into the water that comes from the sky. It won't drink any water but just touch the ground. It's impure as far as the crane is concerned. So the crane sits there with the mouth open when the rains come. And that's the only water he will drink. Directly from the sky. He won't accept anything. One type of Bhagavatam listeners are like that. One type. What do? They'll hear Srimad Bhagavatam and from there they will extract. Only they want the message, nothing else. What Bhagavatam had to say. Ultimately, Bhagavatam is talking about liberation from this material world, not to come back again. So everything what is necessary for that, they will take it from Bhagavatam. Then there is Hamsam. Hamsam means, what's that? Swan. Isn't it? The nature of the swan is to, this all we have talked before, I'm just reminding you again. Hamsam's nature is, if you give them a mixture of milk and water, it has got the capacity to somehow separate water from the milk from the water and drink only the milk. That is Hamsam nature. So even though we may say so many things from the Srimad Bhagavatam, it is in a position to separate it out. Because in Bhagavatam there are a lot of things. What you may think that what has it got to do with me? And many instances like the fighting, the war, and the natural beauty, so many things spoken like that, right? When you read all that, the doubts will come to your mind. Is what do I supposed to do? And that you have to know, like the Hamsam, the swan's nature. Always the message is important, spiritual message in the Bhagavatam. So Hamsam does that, right? Hamsam does that. And then there is the fish, and also there's one more. Forget that. So what it is that some people, they hear Srimad Bhagavatam. And whatever comes in, they will say it to others. Everything what they heard. But it has not gone in. That means they don't follow anything. They'll hear and they'll preach to everybody else. Preachers, basically. And tell everybody else what to do. And they won't do it anything themselves. They'll do what they want. And they say, I've been preaching all these years. To the rest of the world, I'm a preacher. That's the third category. Only one category, the fourth one, is the one who takes the message in and live with that life. Live the life with that. That is very little. So these four categories spoken. Listeners, right? So, Srimad Bhagavatam, that many people don't have the opportunity to listen. And those who are listening, among them also these four categories exist. Who listens to it, right? So, for example, when Bhagavatam was presented, right, the story is like this, Parikshit came first. And Parikshit was presented as the best listener. Means, he had the greatest interest to hear Bhagavatam. And his enthusiasm and his state of consciousness that I don't want to know anything about this world. Death is at my doorstep, what should I do? This was just my question, isn't it? What should one do? He didn't say, what should I do? What should one do? From that statement itself, you should understand that actually this question is for us. Because the question was, what should one do when he is approaching the death? That was the question, right? Not what should I do? So, therefore, you have to see there that if first-class sadhaka, first-class qualified person in spiritual life, is like Parikshit, should be like Parikshit. That means he wants it more than anybody else. Today, we don't want it. We are taking it because there is a lot of pressure on us from others or sometimes you take it just to relish it or whatever it is. That urgency, what Parikshit felt in life, hasn't happened to us yet. It hasn't happened yet. It hasn't hit us yet. It will hit us one day when that moment comes. Right? So, like Parikshit. Parikshit was told, you got 7 days to live. And what did he do? He threw away everything. No family, no children, no grandchildren, no palace, no gold, no power, nothing. Everything threw away in 1 second and went to Ganga river bank and said that I'm going to sit here and give up my body. I'm not going to do anything else. He sat there. And Krishna has naturally decided to use Parikshit to bring Srimad Bhagavatam. After all, Bhagavatam requires a proper introduction to this world. And he chose Parikshit for that purpose. So, just like through Parikshit, Krishna introduced Srimad Bhagavatam to this world. Through Ajamila, Krishna introduced the holy name to this world. Through Uddhava, Krishna introduced Ekadasha Skandam to this world. Through Arjuna, Krishna introduced Bhagavad Gita to this world. Like whatever Krishna has done, he will pick the person through whom he wants to do it, and he will make the arrangements in such a way that through him it will come to this world. This is the sequence of it, how it works. Krishna doesn't need any, Krishna knows whom he wants to use it for that purpose. Arjuna for Bhagavad Gita, Uddhava for Ekadasha Skandam, and Parikshit for Srimad Bhagavatam, and what's his name? Ajamila for the holy name. So everything Krishna is organizing from behind. So when Parikshit came and sat there, that he decided to send Shukabrahmarshi there. Who is Shukabrahmarshi? Krishna himself in another form. He walks in there. So this is why you're saying everything that's going on in this world is Krishna's Leela. Nothing else is happening here. We are all just the pawns in that, playing the role what we have been told to play. And that's all we can do, nothing else. So he's saying here that through Parikshit, it is teaching us how serious you have to be to inquire about Krishna. To inquire about Krishna. And how he should approach a spiritual master. And he asked the questions what he wants to know. How the way he questioned Shukabrahmarshi. And all these things are shown in that first canto. Parikshit's preparation for the meeting the Shukabrahmarshi, right? He prayed to Parikshit, prayed to Shukabrahmarshi that please tell me, what should one do when death is at the doorstep? This was the question, isn't it? Death is waiting. Any moment you are gone from this whole body, you have to leave here and go. What should he do at that time? He said. So, and to prove that, how it should be done, that is why Parikshit had come into that. And then you say that, oh, he did that because he got cursed, isn't it? By Sringi. That's why he has done. And what for that? Why that was spoken then? What purpose it was spoken, right? To show to us that how Vairagyam comes to a person. Only when you are put into a situation where you know your life is over and everything is over with that, suddenly you are woken up and told that, look, you've got another hour to live. What will you do? That so Vairagyam, that how to show that how Vairagyam can come to a person, it is for that purpose this cursing of the Sringi and Shamigarashi, all that story is to present that to us, that this is how Vairagyam comes to a person. Unless you are threatened with your life and threatened with everything, you won't develop Vairagyam. You will continuously still thinking that, well, there is still a lot more responsibility in this world. I have got to sort out so many other things, and I want to take Srimad Bhagavatam after retirement, some people say. You have given your whole life to this world, and at the retirement, what are you going to do? Where is Bhagavatam then? So there are people like that. So to show to us that, unless you are given a strong warning like this, that in 7 days' time you are finished with everything. You don't have to pay any more bills after that. You don't have to buy clothes. You don't have to go shopping. You don't have to worry about family. All responsibilities in one stroke cut off from you. And then you will start thinking, now I have to do something about it. Till then we won't do anything. We will be like this day after day. We will hear Srimad Bhagavatam and then we will go back with our regular activities, right? So, it is for that purpose that cursing of Sringi and everything was spoken, right? In order to point out to us why he was so detached, Parikshit. For that story was saying, because only when you think about death, right, Vairagyam will come. Only if you think about death, Vairagyam will come. Otherwise, it won't come. All other kicks in the life from the world, what you get from the world, you have something in us that will make us to forget it and still look for a better life tomorrow. Things could be better tomorrow. Something like that is the nature of the human mind, right? So, So other vairagyam what you get in this world is what we call as the vairagyam from the cemetery. You know, when somebody die, we go to cemetery with them, and then after the cremation everything is over, we all go home and then we put the telly on. And then we watch the telly and then inquiring where is the dinner. So where is the, what vairagyam did you get from that? Nothing. There's two types of vairagyam like that. One, we talk about ordinary people like that. They go to cemetery and then they come back and then that's all forgotten, right? Similarly, women also, when they have to have the baby, the pain they have to go through, the labor, they suffer so much, they'll say, never again in life we'll have another child. They'll say, I cannot have it anymore, it's too much, the suffering, what for I'm suffering like this? And all they will say, another 12 months gone, the next one comes. So this kind of vairagyam doesn't help. That kind of vairagyam doesn't help. Prasuti vairagyam, it's called, from delivery. Prasuti vairagyam. So prasuti vairagyam, smashana vairagyam and all are useless. That's not the vairagyam we are talking about. This vairagyam is coming from death. When death is right in front of you, even if you are the American president, if it is death is in front of you, you will see the whole equation changes there. No matter who it is in this world, very, very rich people, and they got everything in their hand to do. So important thing is, Krishna is telling us that don't be too concerned about this body. Whatever that's been given to you, use it. But don't make it as the priority, maintaining this body. Because it is not meant to be living forever. It is not meant to stay forever. If you can use it for some purpose, use it. But important thing is to come out of this bodily identity and find your real identity, who you are. That is the main business. Many times we think that if I can fix this body, I got so many problems. If I can sort all this out, and then I'll take to spiritual life. That's not Krishna's approach. Krishna's point is, Krishna's saying, I've given you this body, and this body is working on the lines of prarabdham. Prarabdham will decide whether you should suffer or you should have a trouble-free life. If you are suffering, you accept it as prarabdham. If you are getting a trouble-free life, use the body for self-realization. This is Krishna's message. Krishna's approach is like that. If your body is giving you a trouble-free life, use it for self-realization. If you have got a lot of troubles with the body, accept it as prarabdham. But always be focused on self-realization. This is the way Krishna has advised everybody to take the body, right? So, once you have heard about death, then immediately your interest in all other things will go straight away. You won't be thinking, but there are some people in this world, even in the deathbed, they were discussing about their about their inheritance. Children were fighting each other, who should get what. So at the deathbed, they will all be there. They want to make feel that, oh, we are here for you. They are only waiting for you to go, so that they get their share. And then the fighting starts among them, the children. So many families, you see this all the time, repeating again and again. And then they want to they want to make the best out of that. So the father is thinking, oh, the children, or mother is thinking, oh, my children have all come to see me. Look how affectionate they are. He doesn't know why they are there. He's thinking that they have come to see me. These are all the truth. Shubha Brahmashi don't mince words with anything. He has said this again and again in the Bhagavatam, in so many places. He said, they are there only because they are expecting something from you after your death. Right? And so, so this is why that asakti means attachment, to go, something like this death has to come in front of us. Right? So what that means is, the Shraddha in Parikshit was very high. He really needed Bhagavatam at that time. There was nothing else he wanted. He didn't want food, he didn't want drinks, he didn't want to sleep. He just wanted Bhagavatam. Talk to me about Krishna, he said. I don't want to hear anything else. To come out with a statement like that, how detached he must be inside. How much free he should be from all asakti inside, right? So, In Puranam, this is the style of presenting it. Now, this, when it comes to Upanishads, they don't tell you all these things. Why? Because you are expected to have all these things before you study Upanishads. In Puranam, they will mention it, all these things, for you to make our mind a little bit more peaceful, right? So, Shastram, I'm just saying all these things to tell you the difference between why Upanishads are not helping us very much directly, whereas Bhagavatam can help us. Because Shastram, Upanishads and all that, Brahma Sutram and things like that, their nature is that they will start discussing the topic straight away. Self-realization. Yeah. And as soon as they start saying about self-realization, we think that this is not for us. We withdraw from that. The Shastram nature, Upanishads and other, you know, Vedam, Upanishads, and particularly Brahma Sutram, even Bhagavad Gita, is directly enter into the topic of discussion, which is self-realization. Whereas Puranam, it's different. Yeah? So, for example, you can see, it's not only in this system is in all other processes as well. Like in the Vedanta Sutram or Brahma Sutram, right? Vedavyasa Maharshi wrote, what did he begin with? Athado Brahma Jinyasa, he said. That's the first sutram, right? Now is the time to inquire about the truth, about Brahman. Now, you look into other sutram. For example, Karma Sutram. Jaimini wrote Karma Sutram. Vedavyasa wrote Brahma Sutram. Jaimini wrote Karma Sutram. Patanjali wrote Yoga Sutram. They all have done the same thing like Vedavyasa. Like if you look at Kapila Maharshi's teachings to Devahuti Devi, right? If you look into the third canto, 26th chapter, first verse itself, how he puts it, here he said, Athado Brahma Jinyasa, and there he said, Athado Sampramakshyami. That means he is talking Sangyam, isn't it? Sangha Yoga, that is Kapila Maharshi. So Kapila Maharshi is saying, now is the time to inquire into Sangha Yoga. So this process of saying Athado Brahma Jinyasa is there in all other system as well. Not only in Srimad Bhagavatam or in the Vedanta Sutram. Same thing he said there. Kabilam he says, Athado Sampravichyami Tattvanam Lakshanam. It begins like that, right? Now is the time to talk about the truth. Just like Athado Brahma Jinyasa, he says, Athadam Sampravichyami. Now is the time to talk about the truth, right? Then, Yoga Sutram, how does it begin? Patanjali's Yoga Sutram. Atha Yoga Anushasanam. Now is the time to talk about yoga. So, all these rishis, they're all rishis, isn't it? Vedavyas, and Kapila Maharshi, and Patanjali, all of, and Jaimini, they're all written the different sutram. Jaimini wrote Jaimini Sutram, called Karma Sutram. Patanjali wrote Yoga Sutram. Vedavyas wrote Brahma Sutram, and who was the other one? Kapila Maharshi wrote Sangya Sutram. All of them begin with the same approach, Atha. Now is the time to go into this. Atha Atho Sampravishyam. He says like this, Atha Yogani Shastranam. So, what that means is, all of them, they enter into the subject straight away. They enter into the subject straight away. Brahma Sutram, Yoga Sutram, Jaimini Sutram, and Sangha Sutram. All of them, they, by saying like this, they are entering into the topic what they want to discuss directly into it, straight away, jump into it. Whereas Bhagavadam is different. It has to make the background for everything first. You see how that has been done, right? So, normally Shastram's nature is to directly enter into the topic. Normal Shastram is like that. So, because Srimad Bhagavatam was a Puranam, written in a Puranam style, therefore it has become a story-like. This is the main thing to note. So, advantage is that because it's spoken in a story form, we feel some taste for it. Because there's a story in there, isn't it? Like Mahabharatam brought in and talked about what happened with Ashwatthama And Ashwatthama was sending Brahmastram and trying to kill all the Pandavas. And Draupadi got upset and she's crying and she curses and Ashwatthama and all stories what you find. So everything is like a story form. Even first canto, if you look, you see how Sudha Goswami meets up with Shavanagarishi in Naimisharanyam and they were performing a 1,000 years large satram there and Shavanagarishi says, oh, welcome Sudha Sudha Mahabhaga, welcome, we are waiting for you. It's all spoken in a story-like thing. You don't find that in Brahma Sutram or Yoga Sutram or in Sangya Sutram or in Jaimini Sutram. None of them. Directly the topic is discussed. Right? So, similarly you can see in all of them. Right? So, Kapila Maharshi Sangya Sutram. When it came to Bhagavatam, what happened? It became a story. What story? Devahudi, Kardama Prajapati, 9 children, girls got married, children, grandchildren, all this, a big story. The message was what? Only the 6 chapters, Sangya Yoga. That's the main message. But to say that, we brought Devahudi, Kapila Maharshi, their life, what a nice wife Devahudi was, how they got married, how simple the marriage was, and Kardama Prajapati, how Krishna came and told him that Swayambhuva Manu will come with this daughter and you can marry her, it will be good for you and you will have children and finally I will come as your son. All this story is centered around what? Kapilam. Kapilam is a message in Sankhyam, isn't it? Kapila Maharshi's teachings to Devahudi Devi, which is Kapilam, that is the main message. But if it is presented like that, nobody will listen. So what they did, Devahudi came in, Kapila Maharshi came in, Kardama Prajapati came in, the children came in, Swayambhuva Manu came, then talked about their marriage, how they got married, and how devoted Devahuti was in the marriage. All that is of no use to us now, is it? How good Devahuti's people are thinking. This is the problem in Bhagavatam. Our devotees are also thinking, how can I develop all the qualities of Devahuti? They are asking. And how can I develop the chastity of Sita Devi? You can ask all these questions. You are never going to be Sita Devi. You are not going to be Devahudi Devi either. And men, you are never going to be Kardama Prajapati either. You can forget all that. So that's all a part of the story. So studying all that is not going to help very much. But because it is in the Puranam, and because it's spoken in that way, you find it interesting. Otherwise you won't even read it. This is the difficulty. Whereas the message of Kapilam is what? 25 to 33 chapters. What the final instructions of Kapila Maharshi is to Devahuti. That is an important part of the Kapilam. But to say that, you have to say everything, right from Kardama Prajapati's birth, his austerities and penances, and what kind of personality he was, how he spent his time in the forest, and how Krishna was pleased with him, how he came. And there even, what is interesting in all these things is, when Devahudi Devi, this is all to keep, what you call it, to sweeten it, the katha, right? So, Kardama Prajapati and Swayambhuva Manu has come with to see Kardama Prajapati, right? And Shadarupa Devi and Devahudi Devi is there together with them. So, Swayambhuva Manu is saying to Kardama Prajapati that, you know, I brought her here for you to get married to her. Kardama Prajapati say, yes, I have heard about her before. And I also heard a story that one day one Gandharva was going in the sky and suddenly when he saw the beauty of Devahudi, he fell down on the ground seeing her beauty. He fell off from the sky. All this story, what has it got to do with us now? But it is necessary to develop this image of Devahudi Devi in front of us. How good person she was, how devoted she was, how surrendered she was, and her qualities all spoken there. And later on, same Devahudi Devi wants to enjoy life. And she says to Kardama Prajapati that we are in the forest. I got married to you so many months ago. And we never had a proper married life, have we? Kardama Prajapati never had time even to speak to Devahudi. She was so busy with his spiritual life. And she waited and waited and waited for such a long time. And then when Kardama Prajapati understood that Devahuti has desire to have a good material life, happy family life, when he realized that, he told her that, "I will organize everything for you." And that is when he is asking Krishna to send the plane for him. Kardama Prajapati didn't work hard, go to any office or work. He stood there and said to Krishna that, "My wife wants to have a good family life. You have to provide for that." And then the plane came from Vaikuntham. And you remember about that plane spoken. It could go into heavenly planets and in the heavenly gardens, Nandanam, Chaitraratham. And hundreds of years they traveled comfortably in that plane. And both Devahuti changed their body by bathing in the Bindusaras. And also Kardama Prajapati, when he bathed, he was become like a young man. Because to sense gratification, you need a healthy body as well, isn't it? So all these stories makes it interesting. But all that is nothing to learn from that. If you start thinking, "Oh, this is not bad. Devahuti is ideal wife. I want to be like Devahuti. How can I do this Kali Yugam person? Who is going to be like Devahuti?" You can forget it, all that. So to learn from Bhagavatam, what is necessary for us, we learn to take it. We have to learn to take it. What is necessary? Not necessary, you just read it, enjoy it and leave it at that moment. So that is the way to go into Srimad Bhagavatam, right? And then Kardama Prajapati, Kardama Prajapati has got this son, Kapila Maharshi has come as the son, and Kardama Prajapati goes to the forest. And he reminds her that, "I have told you before, as soon as my son is born, I will be gone." And he goes, right? So, who is left now? Mother and the son. Devahuti and Kapila Vasudev, right? So, and Kapila Vasudev waited till the mother is ready. Only then, mother started realizing the life has been wasted. This is another lesson from there. That no matter how nicely you organize your material life, and whatever you acquire in this world, and happiness and everything, there is an end to it at the end. You will be disappointed at the end. You will get frustrated one day or the other. You will be frustrated with everything, and at that moment only, your mind will turn into spiritual life. And Kapila Maharshi was waiting for that, and one day, she comes to him, and asking him about spiritual life. "What should I do?" Nirvanna nidaram bhuman asad indriya darshanal yena sambhavyamanena prabannandham tama prabho. Material life has only done one thing to me, that I have fallen into the darkest region of hell, and I am lived my life in sense gratification. What should I do? So, when a person has genuine desire to know, that is the right time to speak to that person. Otherwise, it won't be effective. It will not work for him. It will not be effective for him. So, so only then he will understand things. And this is the system in all the Puranams, right? Shastram won't say like that. In Shastram, you won't find all this. When I'm saying Shastram, what it means? Upanishads, Bhagavad Gita, and the Brahma Sutram and all that. They won't say like this. They are directly into the subject. Puranam only will put it like this, in this way. To first stimulate your interest, and then when you start asking, then it will be told properly, right? So, because this is a Puranam, Bhagavadam is a Puranam, at the same time, Bhagavadam is also a Shastram. This is the beauty. I am saying all these things to make you realize that how difficult Bhagavatam is. Bhagavatam is not easy. If somebody thinks that I can read it a few times, some people are thinking like that, "I'll read a few times and I'll understand everything." And sometimes they get confused also. The problem is this: Bhagavatam is the summary of the Vedantam, Sarva Vedanta Saram ki. Bhagavatam is the essence of all the other Upanishads and Bhavaratam, Ramayanam, everything. Plus it is spoken in a particular Puranam style as well. Right? That means It won't speak to you directly. It will be spoken like this, in this exact way, through stories and through, with the background. They will create a background first to tell you the story. And that is the reason why you find differences between Mahabharatam and Bhagavatam. Do you remember? I mentioned to you a few times. There are many things in the Bhagavatam and Mahabharatam different. Bhishma in Mahabharatam is a powerful warrior and a kshatriya and a king. Bhishma in Bhagavatam is a devotee. You see? So you have to know how to approach Bhagavatam. What do we learn from Bhishma in Bhagavatam? His devotion. Whereas if you read Mahabharatam, you won't get the same feeling for Bhishma like the way you feel in the Bhagavatam. It's the same problem. Draupadi is the same thing. Draupadi is a very powerful kshatriya woman in the Mahabharatam. The kind of things she was doing and the way she engineered everything, you know, from behind the scene. And throughout Mahabharatam she is there in so many ways. Very devoted to Krishna at the same time. But you won't get the same feeling when you read about Draupadi in the Bhagavatam. Bhagavatam, you get a different impression about Draupadi. To show to us that from Draupadi in the Mahabharatam, how different she is, Draupadi in the Bhagavatam. Here, what do you find? She forgiving nature, isn't it? When the five children were killed, how forgiving she was. Can you imagine a mother, when all her five children were killed by Ashwatthama, Arjuna and Krishna went and brought him there, and Bhima is saying, kill him straight away. He doesn't deserve it. Otherwise, he has to suffer in the hellish planet anyway for what he has done. So, Bhima is saying to Yudhishthira, your duty is to instruct Arjuna to kill him right now. Immediately he should be killed. Bhima is pushing for that. Krishna is waiting to see what Draupadi had to say. Draupadi is looking at him and says to Yudhishthira and Arjuna, after all, this Ashwatthama is your teacher's son, isn't it? Ashwatthama is Drona's son. And so naturally he should be respected like the way we respect Drona. She is talking about the person who has killed her five children, right? And then she says to him, then if by killing him, what will happen? That Drona's wife, this is the only son she has got, Kribi. Kribi has got only this one son. And if you kill him, she will cry like the way I am crying. What do I get from that? What does it show? It shows that she has reached very high level of bhakti. Bhakti in a person, how do you judge? This vaira buddhi goes away from inside. That is a symptom of bhakti. If you are feeling hate and inimical nature and revengeful nature inside, that means bhakti hasn't developed in the heart. Draupadi in Bhagavatam is an indication of the development of bhakti in Draupadi. Only to show to us that how bhakti has developed in Draupadi's heart, that she was able to say to Arjuna, leave him alone, let him go, don't bother. I am suffering anyway, doesn't matter. Why should I put him into this situation? That means what? Draupadi has a big heart then, isn't it? Able to forgive even such a gross offense what they have committed, but still able to forgive that. Draupadi could do that. To come to that level of bhakti, that is bhakti. This is how you understand bhakti. Bhakti is not all this doing five times arati and deity worship. That is all. That's for the sadhana part of it. Bhakti is this change of heart, that all revengeful nature from us goes away. You have no enemies in this world, because by now you start realizing Krishna is present in everyone. And if one living entity is coming against us, it's my prarabdham that is coming through that person. And able to forgive everybody in every stage and seeing Krishna's presence in everything. Draupadi has succeeded in doing that, and therefore to show to us, Draupadi in Bhagavatam is different than the Draupadi in Mahabharatam. So in the same way, so Srimad Bhagavatam is like that. It will tell you a lot of things, and you got to learn to extract from that what is necessary for your spiritual life and your realization, what that helps you. And that's more important. That's more important. So, it is 20 to 6. I think I will stop here today, and we'll have some kirtan for half an hour or so, and then we'll come back in the morning again.